though with a 20-second. I hereby order that as of tomorrow, we can't wish anybody a Happy New Year anymore, because it will be over 3 weeks into the new year. But as of today, Happy New Year. Here's hoping for a better 2026 than we all had to endure in 2025. So we're going to get started with the board retreat, which is really a priority setting discussion. And today is Thursday, January 22nd of 2026. The time is 9:12, and I'm calling this meeting to order. So good morning. My name is David Nahai. I'm the chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board, and I want to welcome everyone to the annual work plan and priority setting discussion for the 2025-2026 year. This is an opportunity for the board to review past accomplishments and plan for future commitments. During the meeting, we plan to have an engaging and productive discussion that will result in a set of worthy priorities and a constructive work plan to guide the board and staff in the next fiscal year. And I'd like to read a statement before we go on here. So last year, our scheduled January 23rd, 2025 board retreat was canceled due to the devastating and historic Eaton, Altadena, and Palisades fires that were burning in and affecting many residents of our communities. January 7th, 2026 marked the one-year anniversary of the fires. Survivors of the ferocious firestorm are still experiencing heartbreak, emotional loss, unbearable grief, and the raw impact of homes burned beyond recognition, and the tragic death of family members and friends. Despite the tragedy, these residents maintain resilience and show unyielding strength to rebuild their communities. Our board remains committed to protecting these communities and the environment and water resources that serve them. So next, we're going to move on to roll call. Before we get started, I'd like to welcome Board Member Marissa Christensen.
Please excuse my tardiness. I'm so sorry.
Okay. All right. Let's have our roll call, please.
Vice Chair Ashian.
Present.
Board Member Camacho.
Present.
Board Member Christensen.
Present.
Board Member Mendez.
Present.
Chair Nahai.
Here.
Roll call completed. Thank you.
Thank you. So let me also, having just heard from Ms. Bolivar, state that our board clerk, Helen Rowe, is out for today. And filling in for her today is Kathy Bolivar as our board clerk. Thank you for being here today. So next would be, on our agenda would be our update from our board liaison, Laurel Firestone, but she's not here yet. So we're going to hear from her a little later on in the program.
I am actually here if you have time now.
Oh, she is here. Okay.
I got here earlier than I expected.
Oh, well, well, thank you very much. Welcome, and we would love to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you, and thanks for accommodating me. I thought I had wasn't going to be able to join in time for this. So, I'm looking forward to following this. This is always one of my favorite things because I get to hear so much about what's going on in the region that, you know, we don't always hear about, and priorities, and hear from the region about thinking about priorities this coming year. So, Happy New Year. I guess we've already started with a few things, mostly good. Just at the board meeting this week, adopted emergency regulations to administer money from Prop 4 for water recycling funding. And we also expanded our expedited drinking water grant funding program to be able to fund more projects. And that program has been developed to just really expedite, obviously, expedited drinking water grant funding to expedite funding access, especially for smaller and medium-sized disadvantaged communities. We are continuing to work through our agricultural expert panel. We have a number of additional, I think we've gotten through most of our working sessions with the panel. And I think we're expecting a draft to come out for folks to see at the end or sometime in February with a final in March. And again, that's an opportunity to get expert input into particular questions around nitrogen loading, but also thinking about regional differences and opportunities to be able to integrate some of the regenerative and healthy soils practices into our regulatory programs while still protecting groundwater. We have kicked off our water rights we kicked it off before, but we're continuing to move through our new water rights reporting system. There's been a ton of training and help events, and there's also the final reports are due at the end of this month, so we're really trying to get as many in by that deadline. Of course, there's going to be some understanding if it doesn't work, but we're excited to have a functioning data system that can be accessed and used in ways that previously it wasn't. We've done a lot of approvals of recharge permits for groundwater, particularly before these storms, December storms. Let's see if there's anything else I want to highlight. I think the big thing for us at the State Board is we're continuing to work through the Administrative Hearings Office processing of applications for the Sites Reservoir and Delta Conveyance, as well as the Bay Delta Plan update. And we have workshops for 3 days next week to hear input into this latest proposal. It's a hearing. And we're really, really trying to adopt an update to that basin plan this year. With that, we'll turn it over to any questions, but again, just looking forward to listening today.
Thank you. Thank you very much, as always, a thorough and comprehensive report. Thanks very much. We'll see if there are any board member questions.
Sure.
Board Member Mendez.
Thank you. Happy New Year. Board Member Firestone, always appreciate your updates. I was wondering if you can send us anything that you have on the Regenerative and Healthy Soils Project. I think that's something ongoing that we're interested in, particularly for our irrigated lands program in Ventura County. But again, appreciate the update.
Yeah, and I think this report from the Ag Expert Panel will be a really great source. So I think the most useful thing will be to try to figure out how to share that with this board and get that information probably in March, because it'll be compiled then. We're also going to be doing some public sessions and also probably consulting with the regional board around how we need to incorporate these recommendations into our regulatory programs, both Because with irrigated lands, there's a lot that we've done at the state level to provide kind of binding direction to the regional boards through orders and petitions. So this is an opportunity to think about how we might want to give some more regional flexibility to regions, and also just recommendations on how to support those sorts of practices within the regulatory programs.
That's exciting. We'll look forward to the report when it's out in March, and then hopefully we can be on your list for maybe an informational item when your staff is ready. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Norma? Board Member Camacho.
Yes, thank you. And really glad to hear that the board adopted the emergency regulations in regards to water recycling funding. So glad to hear that as well, too. One thing I would like to ask, perhaps at our next February meeting, to get a report back statewide, how are we doing in regards to our water supply situation with these the storms we had and storms that are oncoming as well?
Great.
Thank you. Any other questions for Board Member Farris? No? Thank you very, very much. And thanks for being here. And I know that that you're going to stay with us for at least the bulk of today's program. So thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Next, we're going to move on to hear from the executive team report, and we will hear now from our EO, Susanna Arredondo, AEOs Ross Colby and Jenny Newman. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Chair and Board. I'm going to start off with an overview of our region, just for those that are listening and aren't familiar with the Los Angeles Regional Water Board. Our jurisdiction covers the coastal watersheds of Los Angeles and Ventura County. The board serves over 10 million people in our region. The region is approximately 4,500 square miles, and it includes 120 miles of coastline. It encompasses 96 cities. We are one of the most diverse regions, if not the most ethnically and culturally diverse in the nation. The Los Angeles Regional Water Board is one of 9 regional boards within the State Water Resource Control Board. The regional water boards are semi-autonomous and make critical water quality decisions for their region. The water boards are part of the California Environmental Protection Agency, along with the Air Resource Board, the Department of Resources Recycling and Recovery, the Department of Pesticides Regulation, the Department of Toxic Substances Control, and the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. We work closely with our sister agencies and make partnerships with them. The State Water Board establishes statewide water quality policy and regulation and coordinates with the Regional Water Board's efforts and reviews Regional Water Board's actions for consistency with statewide policy and regulation. The mission of the Regional Boards is to develop and enforce water quality objectives and implement plans that will best protect state waters. Excuse me. Recognizing local differences in climate, topography, geology, and hydrology. All duties and responsibilities of the regional water boards are directed at protecting and enhancing the quality of both surface and groundwater in the region. The people of our region depend on us. As with any complex organization, the budget is a key driver to carry out adopted priorities and ensure readiness for changing requirements. Included in the budget is staffing, which is critical to our newly established programs, such as the stormwater permitting program for commercial, industrial, and institutional facilities. In addition, staffing in this budget includes additional positions to support the U.S. Supreme Court's Sackett decision. Keep in mind that we have the ability to advocate to the state board to keep key positions staffed. Currently, our region has 168 positions. Our legal staff consists of 3 full-time attorneys and 1 part-time attorney from the State Water Board's Office of Chief Counsel out of Sacramento. Respectively, there are Adriana Nunez, Amelia Carter, Axel Jurgens, and Desta Matsuda. The Water Board's mission is to preserve and enhance and restore the quality of California's water resources and drinking water for the protection of the environment, public health, and all beneficial uses, and to ensure the proper water resource allocation and efficient use for the benefit of present and future generations. Our priorities are to implement this mission at the Los Angeles Regional Water Board, which is closely aligned with and supports State Water Board's current thematic priorities. The following are the overarching priorities that have guided the Los Angeles Water Board in previous years, which are to protect public health and the environment, protect and restore water quality, increase water resiliency in the face of climate change and other threats by expanding and integrating California's water supply portfolio, and fourth, strengthen and expand collaboration and partnerships. For the upcoming 2026-27 fiscal work plan, the Los Angeles Regional Water Board has four proposing overarching priorities. They are driven by the Los Angeles Water Board's mission, its commitment to advancing racial equity and environmental justice, its existing and ongoing program mandates, and strengthening the water resilience portfolio and California water supply strategy, adapting to a hotter, drier future. The following are the proposed overarching regional priorities. Since the last time we had a retreat in 2024, they were updated to reflect emerging challenges and opportunities. These priorities that we have adopted align with State Board and the Regional Board's thematic priorities. First, we will remain committed to protecting public health by ensuring reliable access to safe, clean water and sanitation, focusing particularly on the BIPOC communities and communities of disproportionately burdened by pollution. This includes addressing contamination of emerging concerns, such as PFAS, and accelerating the pace of groundwater cleanup to reduce risk to drinking water resources and BIPOC communities. Second, we aim to protect and restore watersheds, marine waters, and ecosystems. Key initiatives include advancing nutrient management strategies to improve water quality, management of the Chiquita Canyon landfill, and the Bayono wetlands restoration. Third, we seek to increase regional water resiliency in the face of climate change and other threats. This involves expanding and integrating the region's water supply portfolio through initiatives such as issuing water recycling permits, approving stormwater capture projects, and advancing sustainable practices found in the 2023 waste discharge requirements for dischargers from irrigated agricultural lands, all while maintaining strong MS4 enforcement to reduce urban runoff impacts. Finally, we are committed to strengthening internal capacity and external partnerships to accomplish the Los Angeles Water Board's mission strategically, transparently, equitably, and efficiently. We will assess implementation of these overarching regional priorities by setting and measuring compliance with performance targets for our various programs. We coordinate performance targets jointly with State Water Board and fiscal year, and last year's fiscal year, we met 76% of our targets for the NPDES wastewater, stormwater, waste discharge to land, and land disposal programs. The Los Angeles region exceeded the statewide average of 68%. And for fiscal year 25-26, which we are halfway through, the region is at 52% of all of its targets. The targets are derived from the previous year's accomplishments, current priorities, and available resources. These are tracked by State Board on the region's core programs and reported publicly every year. The Los Angeles Regional Water Board is a high-performing region based on resources allotted, urban nature of our region, and our mix of industry present versus agricultural land. We are resourceful, dedicated, and take our mission seriously. Target performance can be influenced by court rulings, emerging issues, or emergencies. Understandably, the 2025 LA fires shifted our focus for the first 6 months. As a response, we dedicated close to 1,600 staff hours diverted from standard business operations towards fire response efforts. Another key development in the state of California was a U.S. Supreme Court ruling, City and County of San Francisco versus the U.S. EPA. The decision required adjustment to permitting language so that permitting staff can write permits that align with the decision and ensure full protection of water quality. Even with these external disruptions the region met many of its targets and demonstrated a strong overall performance this year. At this time, I would like to introduce assistant executive officers who will present on their divisions, and then our section managers will discuss their program priorities. These presentations include upcoming compliance activities, upcoming TMDLs to be considered, upcoming discharge permits, status on contaminated sites, and updates on PFAS source investigation task force. First, it will be Assistant Executive Officer Jenny Newman who will present, and then Assistant Executive Officer Russ Colby. Handing it over to Jenny. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Nahai and board members. Can you hear me if I leave my mask on okay? Okay. So I'm Jenny Newman. I'm the Assistant Executive Officer. I oversee the Surface Water Division. The Surface Water Division contains the planning and permitting programs in our region. There are three sections. The Regional Programs section, overseen by Celine Gallen. It contains the MS4 permitting, non-point source, 401 water quality certification, and basin plan and TMDL programs. And it also houses the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program Coordinator and Water Quality Assessment Staff. The groundwater, the next section is the groundwater permitting, land disposal, and commercial, institutional, and industrial, or CII, permitting program. And that's overseen by Jim Kang. And this section is responsible for issuance and oversight of waste discharge requirements for discharges to land and groundwater. The section also includes the wastewater consolidation program and our CII stormwater program. And the third section is the watershed regulatory section overseen by Jung Hee Lim. And this section oversees and implements the NPDES permits in our region for discharges to surface water, as well as water recycling requirements. So I'll go over some overarching themes for next year's priorities. But before I do that, I will go over accomplishments from last year. I'll just highlight a few. The more detailed accomplishments are in your agenda package. So first, as our executive officer pointed out, much of last year was focused on fire response. Staff in the Surface Water Division, particularly in the Regional Programs section and the Groundwater Permitting Landfill and CII section, contributed to this effort by overseeing and issuing expedited permits to ensure flood control capacity and safe debris disposal, overseeing MS4 management of post-fire runoff, coordinating and conducting monitoring, going on inspections, and providing technical assistance and analysis of water quality impacts. We had a lengthy agenda item on the board's fire response in November, but I wanted to acknowledge these efforts again, as they constituted a significant portion of the division's work last year, and we're very proud of our contributions to protecting water quality and helping the communities recover from the fires. In addition to the fire response, the division made good progress on our work plan commitments, and I would like to highlight some of the examples. So, first example, in December, the board adopted general WDRs for non-point sources of trash in water bodies subject to trash TMDLs. This action marked a shift from a waiver to more permanent WDRs, similar to the action the board took for our agriculture program in 2023, and which reflects an overall trend in the board increasing its regulatory oversight for non-point sources of pollution. With these new WDRs, we expect to see a reduction in trash in the affected water bodies. Also recently, very recently, you probably remember the board held a workshop on the draft CII permit in November. This workshop was culmination of years of effort by the CII team, and it included a significant ramp up of work in the last year. To get to that point, staff had met with CII facilities, industry groups, and watershed management groups, while coordinating with US EPA and State Water Board and consulting with tribes and citizen-based organizations in the affected watersheds. Jim Kang, in his presentation, will provide more information about the upcoming plans for the CII program. Another significant accomplishment was the adoption of an NPDES permit for the City of Ventura Water Reclamation Plant. NPDES staff worked with the discharger to come up with a creative way to ensure that this permit for the new ocean discharge was adopted by the board, despite litigation that was pending that was impacting the permit renewal for the existing inland discharge. So by bifurcating the permit, staff was able to bring the ocean discharge permit to the board, and the board permitted the ocean discharge to move forward. This allowed the city to comply with the estuary discharge program or prohibition and make progress on its recycled water plans. So this is an example of some of the creative approaches staff have been taking in light of recent court decisions to make sure our NPDES program is moving forward and that the water recycling efforts can also continue to move forward. Many of the Surface Water Division's accomplishments did not go before the board, and the first one I want to talk about is oversight of the Chiquita Canyon Landfill. As I reported to you in previous meetings, Chiquita Canyon Landfill is a privately owned municipal solid waste disposal facility. It's in North LA County near the 5 and 126 freeways. In May 2022, yes. No problem. Thanks, Anthony. Okay, so the landfill. In May 2022, an uncontrolled subsurface elevated temperature, or SET event, significantly expanded in the inactive northwest portion of the landfill. This resulted in the release, or it is resulting in the release, of landfill gas in and around the neighboring residential communities, and a substantial increase in leachate volume. The increase in leachate volume, along with increased temperatures and potential slope instability, threaten the integrity of the landfill's liner system. And this poses a risk to groundwater and surface water. Landfill staff are working closely with other agencies to track the reaction, mitigate its current and ongoing impacts, and work to prevent future impacts. Last year, staff oversaw the installation of new monitoring wells, participated in weekly multi-agency oversight meetings and monthly community meetings, conducted extensive analysis of groundwater data to assess risk, and worked with the Industrial Stormwater Permitting Unit to ensure permit compliance. I would like to recognize Enrique Casas, supervisor of the landfill unit, who has managed this emerging issue with inspiring technical expertise and a calming, confident and cooperative attitude. We're really grateful to the extra work that he and his team have put into managing this environmental issue. So another accomplishment that hasn't gone before the board is oversight of the regional MS4 permit. Staff in the MS4 program last year completed review of the watershed management programs, monitoring programs, and annual reports prepared pursuant to the permit. And they worked with the enforcement team to finalize innovative enforcement actions for violations of the Machado Lake TMDL-based effluent limits that are in the permit. So with this innovative enforcement approach complete, staff has analyzed monitoring data for 19 additional TMDLs with past two deadlines, and they're prepared to move forward with compliance assurance and enforcement as necessary. Another significant accomplishment was our basin plan staff's work overseeing a contract with three tribes in our region, the Keech Nation, the San Fernando Band of Mission Indians, and the Barbareño-Ventureño Band of Mission Indians, to support designation of regional water bodies with tribal beneficial uses. This contract will end in 2026, and so also in this last year, Basin Plan staff obtained additional funding through US EPA 205J grants to continue the project, and they began drafting a contract to pursue this work with the same three tribes. Finally, I want to acknowledge the more routine work staff do and all the effort that goes into it, particularly in the NPDES and groundwater permitting programs. When this fiscal year is over, staff will have conducted hundreds of pre-permitting and compliance inspections, reviewed detailed technical, engineering, and geologic reports, and oversaw complicated monitoring and implementation plans and scientific studies. This important work is crucial. Once the board adopts TMDLs and permits, it's up to staff to ensure that they are implemented and that permittees are held accountable for compliance with the permits and TMDLs. Now for themes moving forward. As we look forward to the next fiscal year, the Surface Water Division will be focusing on several themes and initiatives to implement the overarching regional priorities that Executive Officer Arredondo described in her introduction. These include controlling nutrients through planning and permitting actions, overseeing and enforcing our permits for high priority sites and sources, such as the Chiquita Canyon Landfill, CII facilities, and agricultural dischargers, protecting wetlands and riparian areas and supporting wetlands restoration, and promoting water resiliency and recycling. The section managers will go into more detail about the specific projects and program priorities that fit under these overarching themes. And thank you. That's the end of my update.
Before we move on, I just wanted to see if Dr. Enrique Casas would raise his hand just so that the board could see him and put a face to his name and all his hard work. Thank you. Now moving on to Russ.
Good morning, Chair Nahai and board members. My name is Russ Colby, and I serve as the Assistant Executive Officer for the Groundwater Division. We appreciate this opportunity to update you on our division's progress and the critical work we are doing to protect and improve the region's vital groundwater and surface water resources and public health. Our mission is directly aligned with the board's goal of preserving and enhancing California's water quality for current and future generations. The Groundwater Division consists of the Remediation 1 section led by Dr. Art Heath, the Remediation 2 section led by Jillian Lee, the Underground Storage Tank and Oil and Gas section led by newly appointed section manager, these are Tintin Williams, and our regional public participation specialist is Susanna Lagudis. Our management, our management position in the compliance and enforcement section is currently vacant. The remediation program oversees investigation and regulates the cleanup of sites impacted by pollutants in soil, soil gas, groundwater, surface water, sediment, and indoor air. The scope of the remediation program covers pollutants such as solvents, petroleum fuels, and heavy metals contamination from sites such as industrial facilities, military bases, oil refineries, ports, dry cleaners, and plating shops. Many properties are in urban areas, including communities disproportionately impacted by pollution. Cleanup results in contaminant removal, reduced impact to drinking water, protection of public health, and economic growth. The underground storage tank program protects public health and the environment from releases of petroleum and other hazardous substances from underground storage tanks primarily through implementation of the State Board's 2012 UST low threat case closure policy. The oil and gas program evaluates and oversees potential impacts to groundwater from well stimulation activities, oil field produced water, and enhanced oil recovery activities as part of the underground injection control program. The compliance and enforcement program ensures that permits and orders are consistently enforced, supporting the Water Board's ability to meet its water quality goals through fair, firm, and consistent responses to violations. Our focus remains on improving water, groundwater, and surface water quality. We protect public health through a multi-pronged strategy that our section managers will expand on shortly. Before we hand it over to the section managers, I wanted to give an update on the Dominguez Channel odor incident. As you are all aware, following a major warehouse fire in Carson in the fall of 2021, a discharge of pollutants and hazardous substances occurred, flowing into the Dominguez Channel estuary. Our investigation found huge piles of improperly stored alcohol-based products such as hand sanitizers and antibacterial wipes in the burn debris outside the facility. This discharge introduced large amounts of chemicals into storm drains, which ultimately caused a release of elevated levels of hydrogen sulfide gas into the air, causing noxious odors that prompted over 4,000 community complaints. After a 17-day trial, a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge imposed monetary penalties against the facility operators Day-to-Day Imports Incorporated and Virgin Scent Incorporated and four of their corporate officers. The penalties included $10 million for failing to obtain a required stormwater permit and an additional $575,000 for the pollutant discharge itself. While the property owners Liberty Property Limited Partner and Prologis Incorporated were also found liable, they were not fined as they spent $10 million on the required site cleanup. This case underscores the Water Board's continuous commitment to holding responsible parties accountable and ensuring the protection of our communities and natural resources. This was really a team effort across all the programs at the board. I do want to specifically thank Pavlova Vitali, Lydia Kim, and Scott Landon for all the work that they put into this case and made it successful. So if it's okay with you, Chair Nahai, we'd move on to item 5 in the agenda now. So please bear with me as I change hats and give the compliance enforcement section update. I'd like to provide a brief overview of our three compliance enforcement units, including their leadership, core functions, key accomplishments in 2025, and priorities for the coming fiscal year. Together, these three units are responsible for ensuring that permits and orders issued by this board are implemented in the field and uses enforcement strategically to protect water quality, public health, and communities disproportionately impacted by pollution. The enforcement unit is led by Ching To.
She's right back there, she is.
A senior water resource control engineer. This unit focuses primarily on informal and formal enforcement of the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDS permits, the sanitary sewer system waste discharge requirements, and investigative and cleanup orders from programs such as remediation, oil and gas, underground storage tanks, and groundwater permitting. This unit also manages the region's public complaint program and oversees the Supplemental Environmental Project, or SEP, program. The Enforcement 2 unit is led by Pavlova Vitali. I'm not sure if she's here yet, but if she is, wave her hand. A senior environmental scientist. Her team evaluates compliance with effluent limits and reporting requirements. They conduct statistical analyses to provide enforcement support to the stormwater 401 dredge and fill, and land disposal programs. Their work includes issuance of mandatory minimum penalties, administrative civil liability complaints, and time schedule orders. Finally, the Stormwater Compliance Enforcement Unit is led by Narissa Schrader, a senior water resource control engineer. Back there. This unit is responsible for day-to-day compliance oversight for stormwater dischargers, including industrial and construction sites. Their work includes non-filer enrollment, inspections, outreach, and enforcement referrals. Together, these three units form an integrated compliance and enforcement program that covers municipal wastewater, industrial facilities, construction sites, and stormwater discharges across the Los Angeles region. So I'll start with Enforcement 1 and cover just a few highlights from 2025. This unit made significant progress in cross-program enforcement. Staff collaborated closely with the Office of Enforcement to investigate multiple land disposal, UST, and remediation facilities that were out of compliance with board orders. They also supported the oil and gas program with inspections, investigative orders, and spill response. A significant enforcement action began with the issuance of an administrative civil liability against the Boeing Company, proposing a $595,000 penalty for 39 alleged effluent violations at the Santa Susana Field Laboratory. The unit also issued 31 expedited payment letters for mandatory minimum penalties under NPDS permits, and in total collected approximately $2.4 million in penalties during calendar year 2025. Another major accomplishment is the continued growth of the Supplemental Environmental Program. The region currently has 10 active SEPs, and over $10 million in penalties have been directed towards projects that benefit disadvantaged environmental justice communities, many of them overseen through our partnership with the Rose Foundation. For Enforcement 1, a key priority moving forward is conducting audits of municipal wastewater collection systems for compliance with the sanitary sewer system waste discharge requirements, focusing specifically on communities historically overburdened by pollution. Another priority is the continuation of integrating suitable SEPs into settlements and updating the region's list to add new SEPs with lower project costs. Additionally, they will solicit projects to cover areas within the region that currently lack eligible SEPs. The overarching focus for this unit is strengthening accountability while ensuring enforcement actions produce tangible environmental and community benefits. Turning to highlights of the Enforcement 2 unit. In the area of MS4 enforcement, the unit issued and resolved expedited payment letters for effluent limit and reporting violations to 10 municipalities totaling $426,000 in mandatory minimum penalties. This is one of the first coordinated efforts in the state to apply mandatory penalties to municipal stormwater programs. Under the industrial general permit, the unit issued 59 expedited payment letters for late ad hoc reports, totaling just over $2 million in penalties, an additional 26 stipulated orders totaling $705,000 for effluent limit violations, and 22 notices of violation for late exceedance response action reports. The unit also inspected 400 facilities that claimed a no exposure certification and found that 135 facilities did not meet the criteria and required corrective action. For the next fiscal year, key priorities for Enforcement 2 include supporting implementation of the amended industrial general permit through outreach and workshops with the regulated community, continuing data analyses of stormwater monitoring results to identify trends and target facilities that are disproportionately contributing pollutants in impaired watersheds. Additionally, the unit will continue to enforce the regional MS4 permit, building on the success of the previously mentioned EPL initiative. This unit's work is increasingly focused on using data to drive strategic, high-impact enforcement. Finally, I'd like to share a few highlights from the Stormwater Compliance Enforcement Unit. In 2025, staff provided assistance to over 600 industrial non-filer facilities to enroll in the industrial general permit. They work closely with 26 cities and Los Angeles County departments to identify recalcitrant non-filers. Staff inspected 95 notice of non-applicability filers and determined that at least 30% required permit coverage. For construction stormwater, staff completed over 160 annual report reviews, issued 122 notices of non-compliance, and 21 notices of violation for chronic late reporting, and issued settlement offers and stipulated orders collecting penalties for late annual reports. They also evaluated 538 potential construction non-filer sites that had previously been enrolled under the old construction general permit. Looking forward, a few key priorities for the stormwater unit include continuing SB 205 and 891 efforts to enroll industrial non-filers into the industrial general permit, completing focused compliance and evaluations in the Los Angeles River and Santa Clara River TMDL watersheds, investigating 295 suspected construction non-filer sites and enrolling them in the 2022 construction general permit where appropriate. The focus here is on ensuring that stormwater permits translate into real pollution reduction. In closing, these highlights show how the compliance enforcement section is turning regulatory authority into measurable improvements in water quality and benefit those communities historically overburdened by pollution. Before I turn it over to Celine Gaillon, manager of the regional program section, I'm happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
I think we're going to hold questions until the very end, because if we get into individual questions, we'll never get through the day. So sure. I'm sure we all have copious notes of what you've presented, and we'll do that at the very end. So just for the board members' a benefit, we are into item 5 right now, and we have gone out of order in terms of what you have in the board books, because the enforcement and stormwater compliance section is actually on page 15 of what's in our board materials. But we can now move to hear from Céline Galan from the regional programs section, which is actually at the beginning of our board. It's on page 1 of what is in our board book.
All right.
So thanks very much.
Good morning. As you said, I'm Céline Galan. I'm the manager of the regional programs section. The section includes several program areas that are doing work related to both planning and permitting. On the permitting side, the most significant programs include the municipal stormwater or MS4 permitting program, the irrigated agricultural lands program, and the wetland and riparian protection program. On the planning side, we have the basin planning and the TMDL program. The basin planning program sets the standards and beneficial uses for our region, while the TMDL program develops pollution reduction plans, uses plans called total maximum daily loads, or TMDLs. And then finally, we have the non-point source program, which addresses non-point sources of pollution, such as agriculture and trash, through a combination of planning and permitting. So the section has 4 units. So I'm going to go through each of them. The first one is the MS4 Municipal Stormwater Permitting Unit. So the unit supervisor for the MS4 unit just retired last December, Ivar Ridgway. So the position is currently vacant, but Iram Razak is acting supervisor until we fill the position. And Iram is right here, if you can raise your hand. Thank you. The next unit is the Wetland and Riparian Protection Unit, which issues permits for dredger field activities in waters. The supervisory position for this unit is also vacant, and Emily Duncan has been filling in and helping run the unit until we hire a new supervisor. She's been doing it for a few months, so I want to acknowledge she's been doing a really, really good job. I don't think she's here yet, but she will join us later. Next is the TMDL and non-point source unit, which develops and revises TMDLs and also runs the non-point source program, including the irrigated lands program. And this unit is led by Elijah Wakefield, which is right here. And then finally, we have a new unit, the TMDL and water resiliency unit, which was just created a couple months ago. This unit is going to develop TMDLs, track stormwater capture and use projects in the region, and also participate in the development of the integrated report that is led by State Board. And the supervisory position for this unit is also vacant. In addition to those 4 units, we also have 3 senior staff. Stefani D'Arianto and Xiaofei Kui are our basin planners, and they're right here. And I'm sorry, Xiaofei, if I butchered your name. And then Emily Duncan, who I just mentioned, is our SWAM coordinator and our principal liaison to SQRP, the Southern California Water Research Project. So next, I would like to highlight some of the main projects each program area will be focusing over the next fiscal year, and I'm going to start with permitting. Starting with the Municipal Stormwater Unit, over the next year, we will continue implementation of the 2021 MS4 permit. This involves a lot of communication between our staff and the permittees to ensure that the discharges are fully permit compliant and that we have the most useful monitoring plans and reports. We use this communication as an opportunity to emphasize upcoming deadlines for TMDL-based effluent limits and to discuss the permittees' projects to meet the limits. As part of the implementation of the MS4 permit, we're going to continue to pursue enforcement actions in cases where monitoring data shows that discharges do not meet permit requirements, including TMDL-based effluent limits with past due deadlines. The MS4 unit, as Jenny mentioned, already worked with enforcement staff to bring some enforcement actions related to discharges at Machado Lake over the last couple of years. We're going to continue those efforts, focusing this year on trash. So next is the Riparian and Wetland Protection Program. This is a unit that issues permits for dredge and fill activities, either as WDRs under state law or as Section 401 water quality certifications issued under the Clean Water Act. So over the next year, staff will continue to address permit requests and to oversee over 400 active permits. The applications we receive cover various types of activities, and some of them have impacts we are more concerned about. In particular, we are seeing a recent influx of projects that are proposing to divert water from concrete channels. Often, actually, those projects are designed to comply with the MS4 permit. However, we want to avoid unintended consequences on beneficial uses as water is taken away from the channels. So we are reviewing these projects closely, and we will bring them to you for consideration as necessary. In addition, we are increasing our efforts to minimize impacts from new development projects in our region's waters. This is a type of projects where we most often see extensive impacts to waters as sites are graded to make space for new buildings. To address these projects ahead of time, we are ramping up our review of CEQA documents and are commenting consistently on these types of projects and other projects that are substantially impacting waters, such as hydromodification projects. These reviews are critical in order to provide input on projects early on and make sure impacts to waters of the states are minimized. And then finally, I want to mention that we're expecting changes to the Waters of the U.S. rule and the Clean Water Act 401 certification rule this year, which will likely result in an increase in applications for permits under state law, and we're ready to address these changes. We are working with State Board on the development of general permits, when we were also able to hire last year two new staff in response to the Sackett rule. So our priorities reflect the fact that we are going to use more state authority to address dredge and fill projects. Moving on to our basin planning activities, starting with the basin planning program. In the fall of 2026, staff will bring to the board the triennial review of the basin plan. Every 3 years, as required by the Clean Water Act, this board reviews its regional water quality standards and the related implementation provisions that are in the basin plan, and identifies priority projects to undertake over the next 3 years. Through this exercise, the board will be able to identify the program's priorities for the next 3 years. The projects that are prioritized will then be incorporated into the next year's basin planning work plan. The two staff in the program will be working on several projects over the next year, so I won't go through all of them. But I want to highlight one in particular, which Jenny also mentioned, and that is a project to identify water bodies in our region that should be designated with tribal beneficial uses. This board adopted the tribal beneficial use definitions into the basin plan in 2022, and tribal uses designations are a priority for the state board in general all over the state. We've been working with tribes to identify water bodies that should be designated through two contracts that will work in conjunction to produce a map of tribal uses within the region's current and historical water bodies. The first contract is with three tribes, the Kish Nation, San Fernando Band of Mission Indians, and Barbareño-Ventureño Band of Mission Indians, and the University of Southern California. And that contract is about to be completed. And the second contract is currently being developed with UCLA and the same tribes. And I want to mention here, too, that a tribal data sharing and confidentiality agreement will be developed as part of this contract to protect sensitive cultural and environmental information that may be obtained as part of the partnership with the participating tribes. Next, for the TMDL unit, we will be working on three TMDLs that were initiated under past work plans. The first is a new bacteria TMDL for the Dominguez Channel, and this TMDL should come to you for consideration this spring. We're also working on a reconsideration of the Los Angeles River Bacteria TMDL. That's a TMDL that was established in 2012, but we committed then to reconsider it later. Both of these TMDLs need to be adjusted for the most recent bacteria criteria. And then third, we are developing a new TMDL that will address trash in Ormond Beach and Lagoon. In addition to these TMDLs that are a continuation of previous work, we're also planning to focus on efforts to control nutrients on the region's waters. And one of the ways to do that will be through a comprehensive review of Ventura River algae and nutrient data. We have a TMDL in place for algae, eutrophic conditions, and nutrients in the Ventura River that was adopted in 2012. At the time of its adoption, the TMDL required some monitoring and special studies to fill existing data gaps, with the expectation that it would be reconsidered once more data has been collected. So at this point, 10 years of monitoring data are available, and a special study designed to understand subsurface transport of nutrients in the Ventura River Corridor has been completed. So we will look into the study and available data to figure out next steps. And finally, we will continue to keep track of the progress of the restoration of the Bayona wetlands. We are in regular contact with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, which oversees the restoration efforts. As the board directed staff to do at the December meeting, we are currently drafting a letter pushing for the adoption of a revised EIR and for Fish and Wildlife to take the next steps toward restoration of the wetlands. Last but not least, for the non-point source program, we will be focusing on implementation of the irrigated agricultural land orders that was adopted in 2025. This is another part of our efforts to address nutrients in the region. Agricultural activities are a major source of nutrients and pesticides, so implementation of the order will help control those. We will continue our work to increase enrollment in the irrigated lands regulatory program in both Ventura County and Los Angeles County, and pursue enforcement if necessary. And a program staff will also work on implementing the trash order you adopted in December, which addresses non-point sources of trash in watersheds that have TMDLs that address trash. So to summarize, over the next year, our section will be is planning to concentrate on the implementation of our existing permits and follow up with enforcement as needed. And we will also prioritize nutrient control, wetland protection, and the restoration of the Bayona wetlands. And that concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. So I think next we're going to hear from John Key Lim, Watershed Regulatory.
Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board. My name is Jung Hee Lim, and I'm the section manager of the Watershed Regulatory Section. The Watershed Regulatory Section implements the National Pollutant Discharge.
Please bring the camera closer to you. Yeah.
Okay.
The camera, I mean the microphone, of course.
Okay. Is it okay to enough, clear enough? The Watershed Regulatory Section implements the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, NPDES program, for the reason and issues individual NPDES permits for publicly owned treatment works, POTWs, in the Municipal Permitting Unit, which is supervised by Stephen Webb, and industrial facilities in the Industrial Permitting Unit, which is supervised by Bronwyn Kelly, and general NPDES permit, which is the supervisor position is vacant at this point, or special categories of the project. The Watershed Regulatory Section also issues recycled water permits for non-potable and indirect potable reuse projects. In addition, indirect dischargers, those facilities that discharge to a POTW, also receive oversight by the Watershed Regulatory Section's pretreatment program. Adam Tang, senior engineer, handles pretreatment programs and manages some recycled water projects. For the Watershed Regulatory Section, our program priorities for the fiscal year of 2026-2027 are categorized into four major areas. First, NPDES permit renewals, termination, and pretreatment program. We plan to renew 10 major individual permits, such as the San Jose Creek Water Reclamation Plant, Scattergood Generating Station, Terminal Island Water Reclamation Plant, and six minor individual permits, such as Haynes Tank Farm, Olympic Tank Farm, and Malibu Mesa WRP, and terminate one general permit for the groundwater discharges from the San Gabriel Valley groundwater basin. We also continue to working with the US EPA and the Office of Chief Counsel to address the US Supreme Court ruling on the removal of the receiving water limits in the NPDES permits and the appellate court's opinion on toxicity provision implementation. Through this opportunity, I'd like to acknowledge all Watershed Regulatory Section staff of their hard work and numerous hours of research, discussions, and efforts to comply with these court orders, enabling us to proceed with bringing NPDES permits to the board for consideration and adoption. Often similar types of discharge occurs from similar types of operations, general permits are developed to streamline the permitting processes to regulate those discharges. Construction dewatering activities or hydrostatic testing activities are good examples for general permit. We currently have 7 active general permits that are adopted by this board. One of the general orders is the construction dewatering general order, which has approximately 200 active enrollees. And every year we receive around 50 new applications in addition to the renewal applications. For fiscal year 2026-2027, we plan to complete 100 general order enrollments and terminate 50 enrollments. The National Pretreatment Program, which was established in the early 1970s as a part of the Clean Water Act, addresses the discharge of harmful pollutants into the municipal wastewater treatment plants. Its primary purpose is to reduce the amount of pollutant that are released into the environment by controlling the discharge from industrial and commercial sources before they reach municipal sewage treatment facilities. The program aims to prevent the introduction of pollutants that could interfere with the operation of these treatment plants, contaminate the sewage sludge, or pass through the treatment process untreated, thereby protecting water quality and ensuring the safety of water body. We are tasked with overseeing the discharges pretreatment program implementations and enforcing the pretreatment program within this region. We work closely with the local municipalities to oversee these industrial discharges, review and approve pretreatment programs, and review and approve local limits, conduct the pretreatment program compliance inspections and pretreatment compliance audits, and ensure compliance with the discharge limits and monitoring requirements. For coming fiscal year, we plan to conduct 4 pretreatment compliance inspections, 1 pretreatment program modification review, 2 local limits evaluations, and 11 pretreatment annual report reviews. In 2023, during the December board meeting, when the construction dewatering general permit was considered for adoption, staff from the LA Water Kiefer emphasized the need for transparency regarding the volumes of groundwater discharged by general permit enrollees and stronger requirements for water reuse of these pumped groundwater. This requirement to reuse water instead of discharge was already included through feasibility study requirements. The board directed us to comply discharging volumes of water from all general order enrollees and publish it on the web for public access. The discharge volume for 2024 is already available online, and the staff will compile and update the data for 2025, covering all reported discharge volumes of water from the facilities enrolled in the all general permits. Second area of our priority is water recycling project involvement. We have been having regular meetings with the Pure Water Recycle Water Project proponents, such as Pure Water Southern California, Pure Water Los Angeles, Las Virgenes Pure Water Project, to discuss regulatory requirements, such as brine disposal options and permitting of brine disposal and other project components to leverage resources and knowledge, improve efficiency, and streamline recycled water projects in our region. We also been meeting with State Water Board, Division of Drinking Water, regularly to coordinate recycled water projects among the agencies and to expedite the Title 22 engineering report review process and provide a timely adoption of recycled water permits. And also participate in the implementation work group for direct portable reuse regulations to coordinate pretreatment program requirements into the DPR regulation as part of the enhanced source control program. And also we are continue to engage in discussions about the indirect portable reuse projects, such as Donald C. Tillman's Hansen Spreading Ground project and City of Santa Monica's Sustainable Water Infrastructure project and other non-portable reuse projects for permit issuance. And also we are planning to update WDR's WRR's permit to meet the current regulatory requirements. And third areas is temperature studies. We've been engaging with the POTWs to derive appropriate outcomes from temperature studies, which will assist the board in making informed decisions about how to incorporate and implement the temperature effluent limitations in the POTW's permit. We're planning to prepare a board item for POTWs to present results of temperature studies for the Los Angeles River and San Gabriel River to the board, and whose studies are nearing completion during the first half of 2026. And also develop permitting options and approaches for POTWs in the LA and San Gabriel River watershed based on the temperature study results. And also we are continuing to participating in discussions and providing oversight in Santa Clara River temperature study, which is ongoing and expected to be completed this year as well. And last category of our priority is new initiatives. In response to requests from dischargers and other stakeholders, watershed regulatory section staff have been involved in several novel projects that were previously unpermitted and reflect unique activities and discharges, such as discharges from the direct ocean capture of carbon dioxide research to reduce ocean acidification or groundwater discharges from a single residential home with small volumes. In some cases, we are in discussion with the US EPA to develop general orders to address these unregulated areas. Another initiative that we are planning to is to assist in development of nutrient objectives. Staff have been working with the SCORP on their Ramsbank model to understand the impact of the land-based loading of nutrients on ocean acidification and hypoxia and the ecological effects. Along with participating in general model development, we've been working with an ocean discharger on a special study plan to support the ocean modeling efforts, which will provide a more reliable modeling result to establish nutrient limits. We will prepare a resolution for the board for consideration of this special study plan in near future. That is all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So next we'll hear from Jim Kang, the groundwater permitting, land disposal and commercial, industrial and institutional stormwater permitting section. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Nahai and Vice Chair Ashian and the member of the board. Good morning. I'm Jim Kang, the section manager of the groundwater permitting. Can you advance the slide, please? Okay, I'm the section manager of the groundwater permitting unit, land disposal unit, and commercial, industrial, and institutional stormwater permitting unit. Today, I would like to provide a overview of this section and our 2026-27 priorities, focusing on groundwater protection, landfill risk management, environmental justice, and the stormwater pollution reduction. Next slide, please. This section consists of three units, GPU, groundwater permitting unit. The supervisor right now is vacant. We just posted yesterday, and we cast a wider net outside the water board. Hopefully, we can hire a high talented supervisor for this very important, challenging position. The LDU, Land Disposal Unit, and the Wastewater Consolidation Program is led by Enrique Casas. Enrique is very dedicated. I really enjoy working with him, even late at night. So thank you, Enrique. CII unit is led by Andrew Choi. I think Andrew is maybe online. I don't think he's here today. So very excited to lead this challenging group. This section issues a waste WDR permit, CII stormwater permit, and oversees compliance and enforcement for activities that discharge to land or generate polluted runoff. Our work spans groundwater protection, landfill disposal, and waste management oversight, wastewater consolidation in disadvantaged communities, and certain CRI facilities, stormwater discharge, to two U.S. EPA-designated watersheds. Next slide, please. Groundwater Permit Unit focuses on protecting groundwater by issuing a general or individual WDR and Associated Monitoring and Reporting Program, MRP. We regulate on-site wastewater treatment system, which is conventional septic tank system, also cesspools, and then we also manage the advanced on-site wastewater treatment system, some municipal industrial treatment plant, and in-situ soil and groundwater remediation project that require in-situ injection. We want to make sure that discharge are protective of human health and groundwater beneficial uses. Next slide, please. 2026-27 GPU program priorities. Groundwater is critical drinking water source for our region. Our focus is prevention. Using advanced treatment tech requirements, inspection, and consistent statewide permitting requirements to stop contamination before it occurs. In 2026-27, GPU priority includes number one, control nutrient and pathogen discharge to land through advanced on-site wastewater treatment system permitting requirements, which require the discharger to install a nitrification, denitrification, filtration, followed by disinfection treatment process. Number two, implement Malibu Civic Center on-site waste disposal prohibition MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, for phases two and three. Number three, we conduct compliance inspection at various types of the on-site wastewater treatment system, advanced treatment system, wastewater treatment plant, and remediation site. Number four, coordinate statewide on WDRs, winery WDRs, and recycled water program roundtables. Next slide, please. Now, bring me on to a land disposal and waste discharge, waste consolidation unit. This unit managed two very different programs. The first one is land disposal program, oversees solid waste management and disposal to land. While the wastewater consolidation program implements Senate Bill 1215, septic to sewer projects, with DFA, Division of Financial Assistance grant, to connect failing on-site wastewater septic tank system of cesspools in disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged communities to POTWs. Next slide, please. So 2026-27 program for priority for LDU and WC program. LDU's top priority this year is to oversee the Chiquita Kenyan landfill subsurface elevated temperature set event and monitor impact of said events on the landfill leachate, groundwater, and stormwater quality. To that end, we will continue to implement comprehensive leachate, groundwater, and stormwater monitoring program. We will also participate in a multi-agency task force and pursue corrective actions and enforcement if necessary until compliance is achieved. In parallel, through DFA grants, we will implement the SB 1215 wastewater consolidation program to bring public service, public sewer service to communities currently reliant on septic tanks or cesspool within the disadvantaged communities. Wastewater consolidation directly advances environmental justice by replacing failing on-site septic tank system or cesspool in disadvantaged community to protect the human health and the environment. Next slide, please. Moving on to the CII, Stormwater Permitting Unit. In 2015, several non-governmental organizations, NGOs, petitioned the United States EPA to exercise its residual designation authority, RDA, under the Clean Water Act for specified watershed. In 2018, the U.S. District Court ruled in favor of the NGO and order the US EPA to designate certain commercial, industrial, and institutional facility to enroll under the general MBTS permit, CII permit. Pursuant to the court order, the US EPA designated CII stormwater discharge within the Dominguez Channel, Los Angeles, and Long Beach Inner Harbor watershed, as shown on the left of the slide, and the Los Cerritos Channel and Alamitos Bay watershed is on the right for regulation under a general MBTS permit. Discharges authorized under this general permit include stormwater runoff and eligible non-stormwater discharges from certain CII facilities located within these designated watersheds. Discharges from residential facility of any type are excluded from coverage under this permit. To obtain authorization to discharge under this permit, this general CII permit, the discharger must submit permit registration documents, PRDs, through Stormwater Multiple Application and Report Tracking System, SMART, S-M-A-R-T-S. And this PRD consists of the Notice of Intent, Site-Specific Stormwater Pollution Prevention Plan, results from initial groundwater stormwater sampling and selection of the approved compliance option and permit fees. In 2026, CI unit program priorities include the following. So on November, we were hoping we can get adopted in last board meeting, but on November 2025, the LA Water Board held a workshop on the tentative CI permit for stormwater discharge. During the workshop, many stakeholders raised their concerns on several issues, including the following. Number one, clarification of mixed-use properties applicability. Number two, owner and operator identification and enforceability. Number three, initial sampling requirements. What does it entail? Number four, timing and incentive provisions. Number five, cost consideration, affordability, and the economic impacts. Number six, definition of permeabilities. In an effort to resolve these issues with stakeholders, LA Water Board will host several work group meetings starting yesterday to resolve this issue by March 2026. We plan to seek board adoption of this revised CII permit by June 2026. Once adopted, CII staff, as shown on the slide, they were very energized and really looking forward to take on this challenge in managing this permit. Our staff will develop a web-based CI tool to assist potential CI enrollees in identifying their watershed boundaries, relevant effluent limitations, and applicable watershed management group. And CI staff will continue outreach to CI facility for permitting, assistance, and support. Our goal is to issue a CII permit that is clear, enforceable, and fair, while providing permittees with the tools and guidance needed to comply effectively. Next slide. In summary, I would like to emphasize the main messages here that reflect our section's priorities for 2026-2027. As described above, number one, protect groundwater and public health through proactive permitting and inspections. Number two, manage landfill risks, including set events through intensive oversight and collaboration with multi-agency. Number three, reduce stormwater pollution with transparent, enforceable CII permitting. Number four, advance environmental justice via wastewater consolidation in disadvantaged communities. In closing, our work emphasizes prevention, accountability, and equity, delivering measurable water quality improvements while maintaining transparency with the stakeholder and the public. This concludes my presentation. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Thank you. So let me ask, are board members okay to continue on to? Okay, great. All right, wonderful. So then next we will hear from Art Heath and Gillian Lee from the groundwater remediations and site cleanup sections.
Jim, I think I missed the email on using slides in the presentation, but that was very good. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Nahai, members of the board. My name is Arthur Heath, and I am the Environmental Program Manager for Section 1 of the Site Cleanup Program. Here with me is Gillian Lee, the manager of Section 2 of the Site Cleanup Program, and we will both be covering the presentation this morning. I'll give you a few comments about the program, an overview, and also four of our accomplishments. Site cleanup is a large cost reimbursement program, basically a polluter pays program, divided geographically by groundwater basins. The program has 885 active cases, with over 500 in the assessment phase and 385 in the cleanup phase. To date, we have over 200 PFAS projects. Excuse me. Section 1 covers the San Fernando, Raymond, and the San Gabriel Basin, as well as the eastern part of the Central Basin east of the 710 freeway. And San Fernando and San Gabriel Basin remains very active Superfund areas where there still is a lot of groundwater contamination that's being addressed. The Section 1 unit supervisors are Anita Fang, senior engineer, Bizu Ayeli, senior engineering geologist, and Jeffrey Hugh, senior engineer. In terms of our accomplishments, I'll cover four. The first one, the program was awarded a two-year U.S. EPA grant for $600,000 in 2023 to oversee 112 backlogged sites in the San Gabriel groundwater basin. As of 2025, staff completed the screening of the 112 backlog sites, and as a result of the screening, 33 backlog sites were converted into active cases. Accomplishment two, staff collaborated with the City of Los Angeles to complete the assessment and cleanup work for the redevelopment of the former 4th Avenue oil and gas drill site. As of December 2025, the site has been redeveloped into 88 affordable residential units for individuals and families. The developer was also awarded an Equitable Community Revitalization Grant, also known as ECRG, in the amount of $3.4 million by DTSC in February 2024 to support the residential project. Number three, in 2025, staff worked with the site cleanup subaccount program, also known as SCAP, S-C-A-P, staff in the Division of Financial Assistance to identify responsible parties who lacked the financial means to conduct assessment and cleanup on their contaminated sites and who would be eligible for the new SCAP funding for 2025/2026 fiscal year. This resulted in six of our sites being eligible for new SCAP grants in the 25-26 fiscal year. And lastly, for a large list of PFAS sites, board staff created and launched a PFAS investigation webpage, which provides information on the PFAS investigation efforts in our region. And this concludes my part of the presentation. Gillian?
Thank you, Art. Good morning, Chair Nahai and members of the board. My name is Gillian Lee, and I am the Remediation Section 2 Manager in the Site Cleanup Program, as Art introduced earlier. In my section, I also oversee three units. The unit supervisor for two of the three units are here today. We have Angelica Castaneda, senior engineer. And then we also have Josh Chikla, who is a senior engineering geologist. And due to Dizar Williams being promoted to the UST section manager, congratulations, Dizar. I have a supervisor vacancy in the third unit. My section is the lead for the Hollywood, Central West, Santa Monica, and West Coast groundwater basin, and all of the Ventura groundwater basins within our region. With that said, I will share with you some of the program's priorities for the 2026-2027 fiscal year in our site cleanup program. Please note that these program priorities are across both sections, as we are one program. In addition to our mandated work plan, grant, and MOU commitments, here are a few priorities that our program will focus on this next fiscal year. The screening for an investigation of per- and polyfluoroalkali substances, or PFAS, continues to be a priority in our program. We are continuing to prioritize completion of the 260 board PFAS orders and evaluate the sites with PFAS detections to determine the next steps for the investigation of PFAS. In addition, our PFAS source investigation task force, which was created about 2 years ago, will continue to work on identifying potential PFAS sites that were not issued state board PFAS orders and requiring the responsible parties to investigate and assess PFAS contamination. As our site cleanup program has the most PFAS cases in all the nine regions, we have also developed a prioritization criteria to assess the PFAS cases in our region so we could quickly evaluate PFAS data and provide direction to the regulatory community on how to address these emerging contaminants of concern in order to protect our groundwater resources and human health. We will continue our efforts with US EPA to have the former Waymeyer site located in the Florence Graham area of Los Angeles to be listed on the National Priorities List, or NPL. If Waymeyer is listed as a NPL site, additional funding would be provided for soil and groundwater cleanups and community engagement. We will continue to aggressively seek funding for site investigations and cleanup due to site cleanup subaccount program, or SCAP, and other funding sources. We will continue to work with local agency partners and focus our resources to prioritize cleanups to remove contaminant threats to public health and groundwater resources, particularly across vulnerable communities such as environmental justices, EJ, and disadvantaged community DAC areas. Another area of priority for our program is climate change and sea level rise. Climate change is causing sea level rise that can negatively impact communities along California's coastline. We will be focused on mitigating the impact sea level rise can have on cleanup sites near the coastline or low-lying areas. We will continue to work with the State Water Board and DTSC to formulate a consistent plan to address sea level rise and flooding for our most vulnerable cleanup sites along the coast and in low-lying areas inland. Lastly, the site cleanup program public outreach efforts will continue to be a high priority as we address the legacy cases in highly impacted communities. We will increase outreach to external stakeholders, including California Native American tribes. And that concludes the site cleanup portion of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we'll hear from Tizar Tintud Williams.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, please bring that mic very close to you.
Okay. Thank you. Good morning, Board Chair Nahai, Vice Chair Ashien, and members of the board. My name is Tizar Tintud Williams. Like Mr. Colby and Ms. Lee said, I'm new program manager of the Underground Storage Tank, or UST program, and oil and gas water quality monitoring program for the past 2 months. I joined the Los Angeles Water Board in 1999, and this past December was my 26th anniversary at the board.
Congratulations. Thank you.
The UST and Oil and Gas Program section consists of 20 talented, dedicated, and productive engineers, geologists, scientific aides, and an office technician with three unit supervisors. Dr. Wei Xintong is in the audience. He is our senior engineering geologist, overseeing sites in the Los Angeles and Ventura coastal area in our region. Ms. Ann Lin, I believe she's here. She was here. Sorry, I can't see with this post behind me. She is our senior water resources control engineer, overseeing sites and surrounding San Gabriel River watershed area. And Ms. Marianne Rennert, she is our senior engineer geologist, overseeing sites in and around Los Angeles River watershed area. The USD program primarily oversees sites as a result of leaking underground storage fuel tanks. The main contaminants of concern in the impacted area must be fuel related in order to the case to be overseen by our program. USD implements the State Water Board's 2012 adopted low threat underground storage tank closure policy. Assessment and cleanup of USD cases are mandated by Health and Safety Code Section 25296.10, Subdivision G. The Oil and Gas Water Quality Monitoring Program monitors and evaluates potential impacts to groundwater from well stimulation or hydraulic fracturing activities, enhance oil recovery activities as part of the underground injection control program, and produce water ponds in our region. The work includes underground injection control review, aquifer exemption review, and project-by-project review as required by regulation. Our staff work with State Water Board and the Department of Conservation's Geologic Energy Management Division, or CalGEM. CalGEM oversees the drilling, operation, maintenance, and plug-in and abandonment oil, natural gas, and geothermal wells to prevent underground and surface water contamination. Our role is to assist CalGEM to ensure oil and gas-related operations within our region adhere to regulations associated with groundwater and surface water protection. I will highlight some of the program accomplishments and priorities. We work very closely with the State Water Board in all directions. The State Water Board regularly acknowledges that our region not only meets a number of USD cases we issue for no further action, but we also exceed them every year. We will continue to remediate and close USD sites in line with the state's low threat underground storage case closure policy. We also continue to collaborate with them in identifying and nominating contaminated USD sites eligible for assessment and cleanup using emergency abandon and recalcitrant account, and reducing the stuck cases list by partnering with officer enforcement to identify non-compliant responsible parties and taking progressive enforcement actions as necessary. Working closely with our public participation and environmental justice and tribal coordinator, Susanna Lagudas, I believe she's over there, we collaborate with partners in federal and state levels, including tribal nations, local agencies, and communities on status updates and next steps on our oversight procedure. To build deeper relationships with the communities we serve, our goal for this year is to strengthen our relationships with the communities we serve. Our goal for this year is to strengthen our education with the public and build a better understanding of the beneficial work we do to protect and restore groundwater in communities. We also be working with the site cleanup program to address non-petroleum contamination at USD sites across the region. Although I'm new to the USD program, I plan to assist the section with my experience collaborating with federal and state sister agency as well as local agency, including internal and external entities, tribal nations, and environmental justice communities. Overall, I will continue to uphold this section's excellence for the protection of public health, public safety, environmental resources, and direct investigations and cleanup to ensure compliance with the statewide laws, regulations, and agencies' policy. I would like to end my presentation with this accomplishment. The City of Linwood and Northgate Gonzalez markets have redeveloped the former Garfi Express site, that is a USD site, located in Linwood, as well as 16 other individual parcels, into a shopping center with Equitable Communities Revitalization Grant. The grand opening ceremony took place on November 10, 2025. Los Angeles Water Board staff with Department of Toxic Substances Control staff and elective officials attended the ceremony. This concludes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I think that concludes the presentations. We can now move to a public comment. Again, I want to make sure that none of the board members require a break of any kind. No, God, such troopers we have on the board. Wonderful, wonderful. So proud of everybody. Okay. So we're going to go to public comment. I have, so public comment is 3 minutes each. I have four cards, and they're all virtual. So the first one that I have is from Long Beach Council member Christina Duggan.
She is not online currently.
Well, perhaps she'll appear. But go ahead, Suzanne.
I see Nick Casper, and he also works for council member.
Yes, I also have a card from Nick Casper from the office of council member Christina Duggan. Okay. Is he on?
He is on.
Okay, so for 3 minutes, let's hear from Mr. Casper.
Council member Duggan is joining right this second. Sorry, so I don't need to comment. She is going to be there. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, please, Mr. Casper.
Hello, water board, members of the water board. You know, I signed on for Councilmember Duggan, and she is going to be joining in 1 second. So I was just a placeholder. Thank you very much. She's going to be joining in 1 second.
Okay, thank you. We'll wait for her to join. The next speaker card that I have is from Wynne, it looks like Calgar, from the Moore Institute for Plastic Pollution Research. Is he or she?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm Dr. Wynne Calgar, Executive Director of the Moore Institute for Plastic Pollution Research. I wanted to provide a comment to say thank you for your work updating the non-point source discharge permit for trash. We found that the focus on data transparency and ensuring that permits were actually being complied with were really good priorities. And we would really encourage you to continue to strive for upstream intervention in future trash management. We see the sharing of data from all of the efforts that have been going on for the non-point source discharge permits, as well as for the trash TMDL compliance, as really that's going to be the necessary information for us to be able to identify upstream sources and be able to identify new types of interventions to trash, which is really going to be the biggest bang for the buck. If we can stop trash from ever entering the environment in the first place, that's the end goal. And that's kind of the long game, but we need a lot of data to be able to assess that. And so I would just encourage you to really put a priority for the next year to making data available, because right now there's currently very little to no data available from all of the different trash monitoring and management activities going on throughout the county. That's everything I had to say. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have a staff response to what we just heard, or?
Okay, I'll try. So first of all, thank you for the nice comments regarding the new trash WDR. Regarding upstream intervention, as the commenter was mentioning, there is a focus on compliance in the new permit, so we'll look at that. And also, as I was mentioning, on the MS4 side, we're going to focus on enforcement for trash this year. And then regarding monitoring, I believe the WDR includes provisions to make monitoring reports available online, right?
Yes, and I want to add that Celine pointed out that we have a new unit in her section, the TMDL and Water Resiliency Unit, and a big function of that unit is going to be data transparency and tracking. And so this can be folded into that. We absolutely agree with this commenter's recommendation, and we'll make that a priority.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. So is Council Member Duggan on yet? Great. So please go ahead for 3 minutes.
Hi there, and thank you so much to all of you for allowing us to speak today about this important topic. My name is Christina Duggan. I'm the District 3 Council Member for the City of Long Beach, and I just appreciate all of your work with regional water quality. So Long Beach is a coastal community, and we are downstream of approximately 800 miles of watershed. Because of where we're located, impacts from across the region usually show up on our waterways and along our shoreline. Trash and sewage spills upstream regularly affect conditions in Long Beach. And in the last 30 days alone, Long Beach has experienced 2 sewage spills that resulted in beach closures. And these impacts are something our community sees and experiences on an ongoing basis. In the last quarter of 2025, this is unbelievable, the city of Long Beach collected nearly 1 million pounds of debris from our beaches. That amount of debris limits how people use and enjoy our coastline and affects overall water quality. So debris that doesn't wash ashore, it remains in the ocean where it breaks down, and then we see the microplastics as a result over time. Those materials persist in the environment and contribute to long-term impacts on ocean health. So over the next 2 years, Long Beach will be welcoming visitors from around the world, including Olympic athletes who will be spending time in our coastal waters, open water swim, rowing, coastal rowing, sailing. But open water swim really speaks to that for LA 28 in Long Beach. And this moment highlights the importance of strong regional leadership on water quality issues that directly affect our ocean. So I'm asking the Regional Water Board to reaffirm its leadership role nationally in addressing trash and sewage spills that impact coastal waters. Continued leadership in this area has a direct and meaningful impact on downstream communities like Long Beach. So I ask that the board continue partnering with local jurisdictions to prioritize proactive upstream solutions. A collaborative approach is essential to protecting the only beach in the Southeast Los Angeles. Thank you again for all of your work and dedication to keeping our waters clean.
Thank you very much, Council Member Duggan. Let me say on behalf of the board that the items that you've raised are top of mind for us, and we're ever mindful of the fact that Long Beach is the recipient at the end of the LA River for much of what is generated upstream, and we fully understand that, and thank you very much.
Absolutely. Any partnerships, we are right on board to help where we can in partnership with the board.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right.
If I may.
Okay, go ahead.
Sure.
Please.
Thank you again, Council Member. This is Board Member Michael Mendez, Long Beach residents. Echo everything our board chair has said and look forward to the opportunity to continue working with you, and would like to invite you to come speak to the board. We tentatively have a board meeting scheduled in July of this year at the Utilities Department. The city's been gracious enough to host us. So our board staff will be in contact with you with the exact date if we once we get that contract finalized, but we'll hopefully be hosted by the City of Long Beach in July of this year.
I would love to come and speak, and I'm so glad you're coming to Long Beach. I'm glad that we can host you there. So absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for that invitation.
All right. Thank you very much. I have one other card again virtually for Mr. Ray Tahir from TECS Environmental for 3 minutes. Is he on?
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Great. Okay. It's good that the board has touted its accomplishments, but it also needs to identify areas where it hasn't performed well. Recently, it adopted the NPS Trustee MDM order, despite the fact that it duplicates the MS4 point source permit. It was also adopted as a redlined draft permit and suitable for public review or adoption.
Mr. Tahir, I'm sorry to interrupt you. We're just having a really hard time hearing you. Is it possible for you to get closer to your microphone?
Yeah, I'm right up on it. How about now?
That's a reading.
How about now?
It still sounds bad. Make sure that your laptop is open or you can physically see your microphone.
Well, I'm not using a laptop.
Well, we are able to read what Mr. Tahir has written.
Well, no,
we can
very different.
Make out what
okay, this was pegged to a presentation regarding public comment, just in general. What I have come up with now is something more specific to the priority setting discussion. Have you heard that?
We can hear you. You're just not as clear as we would and you would prefer. But we can also read what it is that you have put up on the screen. So I think let's go ahead. We can just about make out what you're saying, and we can read what you've written. So
I have some other issues that I want to bring up. I'm really concerned about you not being able to hear me, because I use the same setup when I'm dealing with the state board. Unless your technical people can suggest a ways of me of being able for you guys to hear me.
Can we come back to this? Or can you try calling in?
Yeah, can we try another method of hearing you, because you really are not clear at all. We cannot make out the words that you're saying.
Well, what I could do is send you my comments, and then perhaps you can read them.
No, it's just not working. Is there another method? Can he call in on the phone, perhaps? Or I'm turning to our technical gurus here to see how we can.
Yes,
on the phone.
He can talk on the phone. We will email him the phone number and the code.
Okay, great. Hey, you know what? Would it be possible for me to use a different computer? Maybe the audio will get better for you guys. Can I do that?
No, we cannot. Why don't we do this? I think staff is going to provide you with a phone number, and if you will call in on that number, if you could disconnect now, call in on that number, and we'll try to make that work.
Okay, great.
Okay, because we want to be able to hear you clearly. So
I appreciate that.
Okay, all right, so let's disengage, and then staff will send you the number, correct, Susie?
Correct, Chair, would it be possible to take a 5-minute break while we...
Yeah, that would be nice. Thank you.
Yes, Chair?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree with our executive officer. Maybe we could just take the opportunity to have a 5-minute break and then come back.
We can do that.
Yeah.
Sure. I didn't hear. Okay. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
All right. All of the board members are back, and Mr. Tahir is, I think, on the phone, and we can continue. Mr. Tahir, please go ahead for 3 minutes.
Okay, you bet. It's good that the board has touted its accomplishments, but it also needs to identify areas where it has not performed well. Recently, it adopted the non-point short trash TMDL, but despite the fact that it duplicates the MS4 point source permit, it was also adopted as a red line draft and suitable for public review or adoption. It did not provide adequate public notice. It applied certain cities known as responsible entities to comply, despite the fact that they are not on the 303D list for non-point source trash. No evidence was provided that parks, golf courses, and recreational areas adjacent to water bodies generate significant amounts of trash. The MS4 permit addresses point sources as well as non-point source trash TMDL with various mismanagement practices. The non-point source order incorrectly requires compliance with Water Code 13241, which deals with water quality objectives. The order is not a water quality objective. I recommend as a priority that the board discuss addressing the non-point source order with the Gardena Valley Democratic Club, who I represent. As the board knows, an administrative petition was filed with the state board on behalf of the club challenging the order. The petition requested that the matter be placed in pending resolution. Secondly, the board proposed adoption of the CII permit, which contained two serious defects. First, it did not define commercial, industrial, and institutional properties, but 5 acres or more of impervious surface, making the proposal constitutionally vague. Second, the CII permit ignored the fact that the properties pay a safe, clean water tax that watershed permittees are to use to pay for structural and non-structural controls to comply with TMDL, which is the purpose of the CII permit. In other words, the permit duplicates the MS4 permit and therefore is a double tap. I recommend that the board host a workshop to invite the public and stakeholder to seek input on how to structure a more reasonable CII permit. Lastly, the mistakes the board has made signals the need for annual training. Board and staff need to be aware of the legal and technical requirements regarding permitting and TMBLs that can be helped in this regard. To that end, I would like to be placed on the appropriate subcommittee. Lastly, one more thing. Was the underground storage tanks that were destroyed by the Altadena Eaton fire soil tested for BTEX contamination? If so, are the results available? Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. We appreciate it. Thank you. All right. I don't have any other cards for public comment. Are there any hands being raised virtually? All right. Okay, well, then that concludes public comment, and now we can proceed to discussion among the board members. Let me just start this by thanking staff, our EO, our AEOs, all of the managers, all of the staff here. Thank you for the presentations that you've made today. Thank you for the very dense and detailed materials that were presented to the board members. It's very clear how much work went into doing this work, and it's greatly, greatly appreciated. And I say that not just as board chair or a board member, but as a citizen. This demonstrates how much work this regional board does, how many challenges it has in front of us, and it really demonstrates the dedication and professionalism of the staff. We appreciate it greatly. And with that, I think we can go into board questions. I have a lot of each section as we go forward, but let me see who we can start with. Okay. Board Member Mendes, would you like to start? Even if you don't want to start.
I can start. I have a handful, probably a lot less questions than the chair. So first of all, I'd also like to thank the staff and our EO for the tremendous amount of work they did last year, Courage Under Fire, literally. And the reason why we didn't have this board retreat last year and the immense amount of work that you continue to do. And when David and I joined this, or the chair and I joined this board, I think there was a lot of concern from various regulated entities, stakeholders, from the business community to the environmentalists to cities themselves. But I can honestly say, at least from my own opinion, that we have come a long way in a lot of these 5 years to be able to be a stronger regulatory board and starting to be a visionary leader in the region and the state. And once again, people are looking to Region 4 for advice and case studies of what to do in various situations. So one of the first things I just like to also congratulate on the recent Prologis and the tenant settlement case, one of the largest that our board has seen in terms of fines given for that unlawful release of pollutants into our waterways and our communities. And it's quite important because that was an environmental justice community, and some other boards may have looked the other way and not made that a priority, particularly when working against such well-funded, well-resourced and tenacious lawyers and entities. So thank you for that work. My other question is specifically, the first question is about the new climate resiliency position that we have for the TDML, and if you could talk us a little bit on the scope and what you plan for that position, and what are the recruitment efforts at the moment?
Okay, so so the position is going to be focused on looking into the implementation of the MS4 permit and looking into how successful we are. The person will look at tracking performance and implementation of the MS4. They will also curating a web page that will help tracking results from the MS4 permit. They will as well be the liaison of the Los Angeles Water Board for the clean water program. And Jenny, do you have anything to add for this position that they're doing that I'm forgetting?
Well, I guess the resiliency part. If you could talk a little bit more about that, how is this different from existing positions? How will water resiliency explicitly be carried out in this position?
The MS4 tracking that Celine is referring to is specifically related to tracking the multi-benefits of the stormwater capture projects and how they contribute to water resiliency in the region. So that's why Celine pointed out they'd be working closely with the Safe Clean Water Program to make sure, to use their data as well on volume capture as well as pollutant reduction.
Thank you. Important position. Do other regional boards have that position?
There's a similar program at State Water Board called STORMS. Then they have several water people working on water resiliency issues. This unit and this position will also cross over with our NPDES permitting program and our water recycling staff person in that program. So a multidisciplinary position and program in the regional program section.
Okay, thank you. The other two questions is more like some follow-up in terms of public participation, environmental justice, and the basin water planning. While tribal relations and beneficial uses overlap with environmental justice, they're quite different. And I know that was mentioned during the presentations. But I was wondering for both some of these beneficial uses for tribal nations and groups, if we can sometime in the next couple of months get a report on it, specifically what is going on, and sort of that progress a little bit more in depth and set opportunities to speak to some of the tribal nations, because we see some of these issues popping up, particularly on the Biona wetlands and a couple other issues. So I think, being able to the board and staff in a public setting, be able to build that relationship and hear directly from some of those stakeholders would be important. And then in a related issue for the environmental justice work that you're doing, we'll talk about this later, Sabrina and I, about the subcommittee, but it would be helpful for us to have an informational item from the state board on, they passed about a year and a half ago, their environmental justice plan. And we were told early on that we should wait till they pass theirs before we do something at the regional level. So if that's possible to also have an item to find out what exactly the board passed, what is their implementation currently or their implementation schedule, so we can figure out how we can, be complementary and what are the gaps for our region. I may have some more questions later, but I think that's the big picture kind of questions that I had and comments I had. Thank you.
Yeah, we can definitely see to organize those information items.
Thank you.
And if I may, Board Member Mendez, I just wanted to add about, I know you mentioned the position that just recently opened, the water resiliency position, and others that we mentioned that are vacant. We are actively working on recruitment, and we've been working with state board talent and acquisition and coordination as well. So just wanted to let you know that we're actively recruiting and working hard to get new talent.
Yes, and thank you for, I forgot about that second part of the question. Particularly for this new position, we're probably one of the first regional boards to have it. It's quite an important position. Maybe if you can send the board maybe one of your postings that we can share with our networks for that we can help find the right person for this position.
Will do.
Great, thank you. Who would like to go next? Marissa, would you?
Yes, thank you so much. And wanting to echo what my fellow board members have already said, by commending you for the good work that you've done in the last year. It was a tough year on so many levels, and I truly appreciate the focus on the fires, your continued focus on climate, on tribes, and on data transparency. In this era where it's hard to know what's true and what's real, and there's sort of a cloud hanging over even using the word climate. I think it's really important that we as a board and you as the team continue to carry forward these really crucial subject matters. And not only does our region deserve and need a focus on climate, and you are truly leading the way in that. But it's also a small way that we can all show our own form of resistance. A couple of questions. Jim, I think it was you that mentioned kind of all of the proactive approaches that you're going to be taking this year, and it struck me as quite a lot of work, and I know that we have some vacancies on our team. Do you feel resourced to be able to meet these goals?
It's challenging, yeah, and that's why and that's why we're working with the State Water Board talent recruitment team right now, and they even provide some support to us to help to cast a wider net, you know, including like LinkedIn, Indeed, and other you know recruitment platforms to identify the talents, and but we. Currently, we are still working based on the cars we have, the talents we have, but it will be great that we can identify the vacancy, fill up the backfill the vacancy as soon as possible.
That's great. And you feel like you're getting headway on that with
yes.
the... Okay.
Yes.
Great. Great. Let's see. I was curious about the tribal beneficial uses. Certainly, those have been applied elsewhere outside of the state. Are there good precedents? Have you seen this successful in other areas? And if so, what were the outcomes?
So I don't know the answer to this question because I'm you know just coming into this role. I don't know if there's been tribal beneficial uses outside of the state. Stephanie, do you have the answer to this?
Stefani, can you come up to the podium, please? Thank you.
And she wants to know out of state.
Yeah.
Other state.
Or, you know, truly any good example. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I don't know if there is any tribal beneficial use designations, at least within the state of California.
Okay.
In the past, like, the regional board that like can come closest to that designation is Region 6. They try to designate the Mono Lake with TSUP, which is tribal subsistence fishing, but I think they back off with that designation because there's not yet like sufficient evidence, and in this case it's like how much is the consumption rate to be able to support that designation.
Got it. Okay.
Because, yeah, based on like what the guidelines that we receive from the OCC is that there's supposed to be like some kind of consumption rate to be able to support tribal subsistence fishing designation.
Okay. Wow. So then we'll be the first if we can pull it off. That's impressive.
I think Region 5 also received like at least, I think, 13 requests to designate their water bodies with tribal beneficial uses, and they're also like in the process.
That's great. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Board Member Christensen, may I just add to that excellent explanation just
yes.
to say that the State Board Office of OPEDA, they are in charge of coordinating our tribal beneficial use work, as well as all of the basin hunting programs throughout the state. So I just want you to know it's a coordinated effort and with a lot of involvement by State Board. And we are going to all collectively learning from each other and building on lessons learned in Region 5 and 6. And but who knows, maybe we will be the first one to end up with a designation. But
thriving.
I agree, and I just wanted to add that we are thriving and working really hard, and I know it's been mentioned in the past that in our region Our tribes aren't federally recognized as well. So that's a big challenge for them as well.
Yeah. So. Okay, thank you for that. About the PFAS, I'm just wondering, I think it's fantastic that we have such a focus on it. Obviously, it's very important. And out there in the zeitgeist, people are aware and kind of tracking it. I'm wondering, what are the available and effective remediation strategies for PFAS? Like, what can actually be done to get it out of the water?
Sure, Board Member Christensen. So, yeah, PFAS is an emerging contaminant concern. Right now, our focus is to assess the extent of the PFAS, but the treatment technologies are, I guess it can be pretty challenging. You can use carbon. That's a way that can treat the PFAS, but it can be very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, in terms of the work that we're doing, you know, we're focusing on the assessment, so we have not required remediation of the PFAS, but I would say, you know, carbon is one form of treatment, and I guess I could also defer it to Jim, who probably is more familiar with the different treatment technologies, if he wants to add to that.
Yes, PFAS right now, of course, GAC is like a bituminous coal, have a wider pore size distribution. My work as a politician, but right now we are looking at the selective ion exchange, the special reason designed for that, so they can more selective capture PFAS and let others the constituent go because it's very expensive. And right now, one of the sites has done the extensive bench-scale study, and they already put in the full-scale system right now in our region. And that's one of the system, because they try to reinject the treated water, but they told us that they can meet the current US EPA, the PFAS 5 constituent standard. So I think that's promising, the selective ion exchange. There are other very innovative technologies still in the development stage. So I would say right now will be the ion exchange followed by GAC as a partition. But there are other way to deal with the PFAS constituent, because right now it's not just five, there are 30 or 2,500 constituents.
Oh, wow.
It's challenging, yeah. Because the molecule size is very small.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering, are you seeing a lot of activity in like the tech and innovation space? Are people actually focusing on this and investing in it?
Yes. In the consulting world, there are many companies right now. They're working with the aerospace company, with DOD facilities, and yes, there's been tremendous study, investigation, and to continue to develop the innovative technology can provide a very promising life cycle cost versus to just with GAC. So
that's great. Okay, yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. So there's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think that is it for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Would you like to go next, Vice Chair?
All right. Thank you, everyone. I first just want to thank all of the managers for all of the presentations. That was incredibly beneficial. It's great to have a roadmap for the year of not only the priorities, but when we are maybe to expect some of these items to come before the board. And so it was really helpful to hear. Thank you also, of course, to our executive officer and assistant executive officers, and also to all the staff. And it's wonderful to see so many of you today, and then to be able to put names and faces together. We truly appreciate the work that you're all doing, and we know how dedicated you are and how much work there is on a normal basis, and then add on to that all of the hours that were spent on the fire efforts last year. And so really truly want to express our thank you and gratitude. And I think that so often during the meetings we come and say,
items about, can you bring these to us, or can you show us this, or can you work on this? So it's so wonderful to hear what you're working on, as opposed to just dictating things that, you know, we think should be worked on. It's very helpful to hear from all of you as experts about what the materials are that you need help with, what you're working on, who you're collaborating with, how partnerships are happening, and how our region is working with the state and working with sister organizations. And so it's all really beneficial to hear. The questions I have are really kind of just big picture, which is maybe if someone or some of you can speak to ways that we can assist and be amplifying the work that you're doing, as well as with regard to the vacancies. This is something I've spoken with our executive officer with a little bit, if there's a way that we can be amplifying those job postings and sharing with our networks, perhaps, to especially for some of the newer positions in terms of my background of teaching, you know, a lot of graduating students and things like that might be helpful for seeing some of these posts. So those are really my main questions. And then I have just a couple of minor little technical questions, which maybe I'll get into, and then you can answer those. So I just had a quick question about the underground storage tanks that you were talking about dealing with fuel related. So tanks that have, you know, were dry cleaning materials or that sort of thing, is that a different unit or?
Yes. Okay. That we refer to site cleanup program.
Got it. Okay. All right. Thank you. And then I think, the only other item that I wanted to mention, and I can also follow up with our executive officer about this, is I thought that was wonderful news that we are going to be hosted by Long Beach potentially in the summer. And I know that I'm going to sound like a broken record because I think I've mentioned this in a couple of previous meetings, but I think that when we can participate in other communities, it's really wonderful to have the participation of those communities and to have them see how hard that we're working in their region, especially in some of the disadvantaged communities across our region, as well as I think it's really beneficial when we're able to go to Ventura. I know that I'm a Ventura resident, but I know that a lot of the Ventura residents don't come this far to our meetings, and so I think it's beneficial when we can plan those. So if there are a couple of meeting dates over this year where we can participate either in some of the communities in Los Angeles and or in Virginia, that would be great too. In Ventura, that would be wonderful. And I also just wanted to mention Ventura Public Works said that they think that they could host us as well, so I can follow up on that. So I think that's it for me, but if there are ways that we can be assisting in your efforts, I really think that that's a great dialogue for today. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, and I just want to ditto those remarks in terms of my thankfulness to staff and all you've done this year. It's been quite, you know, the challenge, and you've come through. And one thing that I'm noticing is that although it was a very heavy year with a lot of heavy lifts, I feel a lightness in the room and this collegiate atmosphere of people excited and engaged in doing their work. So I want to commend you for that and keep that attitude going. Things may not get any easier, but I think it's easier when you can rely on each other to really move the ball forward. And so I see that spirit all around this room. So it really makes me have hope. But I do want to have a few questions, and my first question is to Russ. And first, I wanted to underscore the congratulations on the Dominguez Channel that was, you know, a hard-fought battle, and now that there are results, and we already, it also went up to the state level as well, and so it was a very complex issue. So congrats to you all for coming through. But you did talk about the successes in regards to fines that were levied, and although, you know, that is a good thing and a way to measure it, I was just wondering how you're using that opportunity of engaging with those folks who have gotten fined to prevent or reduce future noncompliance, to prevent frequent flyers from happening. We don't want to see them coming up again and again and continually being on the list, so to speak.
I totally agree. I always joke that I would love to be out of the enforcement business and just be in the compliance business. I think a good example of, it's really hard to measure compliance or a return to compliance. One measure that I've been looking at are the mandatory minimum penalties that we issue for NPDES facilities, for example. Since we started issuing them around 2008, there's a steady decline in the number of EPLs that we issue to facilities and the amounts. So it's working. It takes a while to see the progress. You'll see that for stormwater, we started mandatory minimum penalties a lot later. So you're not seeing that decline yet, but I anticipate that we will start seeing a decline, a return to compliance, let's call it, for stormwater facilities.
Yes, thank you for that. And I also have a question for Celine in regards to the basin planning process. And I was recently forwarded a letter from the stewards of the Arroyo Seco that had some very interesting ideas in terms of trying to integrate stream and habitat restoration into our regulatory framework. And in particular, in their proposal, they state that they want to broaden the basin plan objectives to include biological integrity, hydrologic function, and habitat quality as measures of water quality. And then also to integrate stream and habitat restoration into the regulatory compliance framework as well. And then develop from this board policies that really advance ecosystem-based climate resilient watershed management across the LA region. So I was wondering, you know, what are some of your thoughts in regards to that? And is there a willingness maybe from Susanna to have a sit down with them to kind of roll some ideas around? It may be too late for this go around, but you need to, you know, we could possibly start from some point. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Okay, I have a lot of thoughts. So I'm gonna try to organize them. In terms of their request to look into adding some new objectives, we are already working into bioassessment objectives. That was a priority of the last triennial review. We're expecting it will continue into the next triennial review. I know they were asking for other types of objectives, such as hydro modifications and the one you were mentioning. I think we can look into that. I don't know if it's something we can do, but it's definitely something we can consider, and then, you know, we'll look into it over the next few months as we're looking at the various requests for new projects for our basin planners. In terms of restoration in general, and you know how we are involved in the region, so usually restoration projects come to us through the dredging field program. That's, you know, that's where we get the applications for these types of projects. There is some effort statewide to prioritize those projects and make them, you know, go through the system faster. We are part of the Cut the Green Tape initiative, which was led by the governor with Fish and Wildlife. There's actually a workshop planned in March that's being organized right now, where we come together and talk about, you know, better ways to, emphasize those projects and get things done faster. We also have monthly meetings with Fish and Wildlife, Coastal Commission, and everybody in the state to talk about restoration projects. So there's a lot going on that, you know, and the public is not necessarily aware of. We also have a general order. I know they were mentioning in their letter that we need a general order. We do have one that applies to restoration permits in general. Let's see. Sorry, still trying to organize my thoughts. I also want to mention we are participating in the Southern California Wetland Restoration Project that also looks at restoration projects.
Yeah, but you don't have to have a full answer today.
I think that was something else. It just escaped me. I'm sorry.
no problem. But I just was wondering, you know, the willingness of your staff to get together with them to hit some more ideas around might be beneficial as well.
Yeah.
And then also to work with other, you know, regulatory agencies like you have done through the cutting of the green tape. To try to get some, some synergies going in terms of establishing a regulatory framework that can expedite us to the goal that we're all trying to achieve.
Yeah, and we're always happy to see those projects. So whenever we see that, we're really happy to see them and trying to get through the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Chair Camacho, sorry, yes. To answer your question, we are happy to meet with the stewards of the Arroyo Seco group or Mr. Brick as well to follow up on his letter. So we will gladly meet with him.
Okay, thank you very much for that. And then a second questions I have is in regards to the irrigated lands program, ag lands program. And so we had heard today in regards to the state expert panel. But I just wanted to know how your staff has been involved in that expert panel process.
So Elisha is very involved. She's been participating in the meetings. She made presentations. And so, yeah, we're definitely involved and we're following what's happening there.
Yeah. And so I just wanted to make sure that it is known that this region leads in many of the new areas that are being explored and talked about on the statewide level as well. And so, one question I have, kind of like going down the line, I just wanted to let Jung Hee know how much I appreciate, you know, all of their work in terms of, you know, discussions and engaging on brine disposal options and trying to look, because that is going to really expedite recycled water. I mean, and if it's not solved, it'll stop dead in its tracks, you know, when we get to that point. And so glad for those coordination and the pre-discussions you've been having. And also on the pre-discussions you've been having on the DPR regulations too with interested parties, and that is actually going to be occurring this month as well too. And so I'm glad for that engagement and then bringing of the state and DDW involved in those discussions with our, you know, local agencies and districts, water districts down here is going to be really, really helpful and to develop those relationships. And so congrats to you. And one thing, moving on down the line, I'm just wondering, we talked about the Malibu Civic Center, and, you know, I'm just wondering, what is the timeline for that MOU for phases 2 and 3, and I think that was Jim.
Yeah, we plan to get adopted about last year now, because we have a dispute about the map, phase 2, you know, boundary map, and phase 3. And then right now we have been, Jenny and I have been working with Malibu Rob and their team to get a consensus about the limitation of the boundaries and the in where can get the system upgrade, or it has to be tied into the centralized treatment system. So I think we will start restart our meeting on a weekly basis and to try to get it resolved. Then we will redevelop the timelines for phase two and phase three implementation.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, and so it's good to see that it's still still moving.
Yes, yes.
And another question I have on Arthur's presentation in regards to the PFAS investigation webpage. What type of efforts have been made to make the public know that this information is available on the web? Or is it available to the public at this point?
Yeah, Jillian's going to cover that one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes, Board Member Camacho. We recently launched it, so it's on our webpage, so it's available to the public. But you do make a good point that we can send an announcement. I think that's kind of in our planning process that we're planning to do that, share that, saying that, no, the webpage is available, so if the public or stakeholders are interested in knowing the PFAS efforts in our region, they can be directed to that webpage. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, that would be good because people get lost in that. But it's good to see that, for them to know that things are happening.
Right, and, right, yep.
And then also you talked about the PFAS task force as well, too, that has been formed. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering who's on that task force?
And Art can speak to that.
Okay.
Yeah, Jeffrey Hugh, one of the unit supervisors, I think he's not here, he left. But anyway, he's headed up that task force. So it includes staff within the site cleanup program. We've included landfills and any other programs where we have data to show that PFAS may be a source at their sites. And what we've done, at least in San Fernando, we've met with LADWP, we've met with Glendale, we met with San Fernando, all the cities that or agencies that basically had interest in PFAS contamination. We met with them. We sat down and talked about what we're doing in San Fernando in terms of trying to identify additional sources of PFAS.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And just a congratulation to Thizar for her recent promotion. And I was wondering, just to educate me in terms of what is, you know, your regulatory role in the oversight of wells, oil and gas wells that are currently dormant that may be contemplating reactivation, especially those that are adjacent to sensitive communities. What is our role exactly?
Right now, under the UST, that will be under CalGEM, but if CalGEM reviews for the permits, then we will work with them to see, you know, the water, the aquifer is protective for before the permit is issued. So it wouldn't be directly from us, it would be through CalGEMs, and we will assist CalGEM before they issue the permits.
And this is applicable to fracking projects?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and maybe it would be a good idea to, maybe in the future executive officer reports, that we could talk about or be aware of new projects that are, or sure, revitalized or reactivated projects that are coming to the fore. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's all I have.
Great, thank you. I don't know if board member Firestone is still with us, but even if she's not, I just want to publicly thank her for all of her service and leadership this past year. I've often said that I think she should receive the Liaison of the Year award for her collaboration with us. I don't know if she was provided with these materials that we've seen, But if not, I think she should be given some kind of synthesis of what it is that we're talking about here today. I think especially on the administrative side, when I look at the shocking number of vacancies and resource needs, I think that that really has to be brought to the attention of the State Board. So what I'm going to do, and I hope that my fellow board members will bear with me, I'm going to go presentation by presentation and ask my questions. And you've done all of this work. I want to honor it by providing it the deep attention that it needs, even if that does mean posing certain questions to all of you, including you, Mr. Colby. Okay. So, all right, so we'll start then with the regional programs section with Céline Gaillon. D'abord, merci bien pour votre travail.
Merci.
Appreciate it very much. Okay, so here are the questions that I have, and I don't know if you can follow along the written materials that I have. You should have them. So the first question is, you refer to the preparation of the reissuance of the next regional MS4 permit. What is the timing for that?
Okay, so the applications are due in March, and then we'll start the reissuance process. It's my understanding is that it's not a quick process. You know, there's going to be a lot of applications to review. We have to figure out, what work, what doesn't work in the permit, and what we want to do with it. So I'm expecting it's going to take a little bit of time.
What is our target date?
I understand the last one took 5 years to reissue, so I don't have a specific time in mind, but I know it's going to take a while.
I can add to that, Chair Nahai, and that's all correct and very good. I just want to add that staff in the MS4 program have been doing the monitoring data analysis that's necessary to support the renewal already, so they've done a lot of work already. Along with the application for a new permit, the permittees submit adaptive management plans, so they describe what changes that they're going to make to their programs to better comply with the permit, and so that's one of the things that takes a while to review, and those will be coming with the application in March. And then I just wanted to lastly say that so long as the permittees file the report of waste discharge, the application on time, the permit is administratively extended. So the current permit can remain in effect and will remain in effect while we're developing the new one. And we don't see a need to rush the process. It doesn't have to take as long as it did in the past, but
not trying to rush the process.
Yeah.
I think we have a permit in place. My main interest is actually the implementation and enforcement of
Good.
The permit that we have.
Good.
But
okay.
Since it's here, that there is a reissuance, I was wondering what the timing for that is. Okay, let's move on. So the written materials also point out the fact that we have 19 past due TMDLs. I won't say anything more about that other than to emphasize the fact that we have 19 past due TMDLs. And that's... There's so much that I think we can congratulate ourselves for. I don't think the TMDL's expiring is on the list of self-congratulation. So I would just point that out.
Can I clarify? That doesn't mean that it's like a bill is past due and we haven't paid it. The wording, it may be wrong. It just means that those are TMDLs whose deadlines for compliance have passed.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I understand that. And it is that there were compliance dates in the TMDLs that have passed.
Yes. Okay.
But they're still incorporated into the permits, and now the permittees would have to comply with the final compliance. So the TMDL is still operative.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. However, when we painstakingly pass those TMDLs after often extensive input from the community and much discussion, we arrived at dates, right? And those dates have passed. I mean, I don't, that's not an issue to be disputed. I'm pointing it out. And I'm saying that the fact that we have adopted TMDLs with dates in them that have since expired it's not something that any organization should celebrate. Okay, there's much to celebrate. I don't think that is one of them. So again, regarding TMDLs, one of the program priorities that we have here is to pursue enforcement actions for violations of TMDL-based effluent limitations in the regional permit. That is listed as one of our program priorities, right? So could you please explain to us what that looks like, and perhaps you can add to this when we talk about pursuing enforcement actions for violations of TMDL-based effluent limitations. Just elaborate for us what that means.
Okay.
Because it is a priority. I'm reading it.
Yes, I'll try. I'm new to this, so I'll try my best, and then Jenny can and Russ can help if I get this wrong. So the first step is going to be to look into compliance, and you know, staff already started to look at that, and then we're going to decide which entities we want, or which TMDL we want to focus on first, and then we'll coordinate with enforcement to see what is the best tool we want to use to try to reach compliance. Last time it was EPLs. I don't remember what it stands for, but it's it was an expedited process, and I'm assuming we might take the same path, but then I see Russ is ready to take over and help.
So our first effort was with the Machado Lake and Harbor Regional Park TMDL. There are some factors that go into the prioritization process, and one obviously that the TMDL has been, you know, the compliance dates have come. The second factor we're going to look at is, has everyone submitted their data, and can we use that data to find those effluent limit violations? And then, so that's where we're working very closely with the MS4 program to find out where our next TMDL lies that we're going to go with. I'll say the first effort was successful. It took a lot of time and effort to get over the goal line to, one, issue them, and then come to a settlement with those cities. It's a new process. There are TMDLs that have multiple responsible parties at the end of pipe. You get that. So that's the process.
Yeah. The complexities of it are not lost in me at all. Okay. I think Board Member Christensen talked about tribal beneficial uses. I do recognize that the tribes that are within our region are not yet federally recognized. But I would also say that I think that board member, our liaison board member Firestone, has also championed the issue of tribal beneficial uses at the state level. I think she has led on that. So I think we can closely coordinate with the state board on those efforts. I want to move on to 401 certifications, and what I read recently is that US EPA is changing the rules on 401 certifications, which would make it, again, more cumbersome, let us put it that way, to proceed as we have normally with respect to 401 certifications. So this is yet another example of what the current federal administration and the Supreme Court steps that they're taking in order to erode environmental protections, and so I think this is something that we have to work very closely with OCC and the State Board and the Governor's Office and CalEPA in order to make sure that as California we're able to continue the noble work of protecting the environment, notwithstanding the kinds of headwinds and the efforts to stymie environmental protection that we're seeing. And I think that is one of the items that we should have as a priority. And I'll go through my priorities later on. Okay, we've talked about algal blooms. There are a number of things, by the way, that are priorities for the board that cross sections, right? I think PFAS is one, algal blooms are another, and I don't think this organization is that way, but there are other organizations where things get siloed, right? This is this section's province. This is this section's responsibility. I don't think that the regional board works that way, and I'm very, very happy about that. But in terms of response, like algal blooms are part of your section's responsibility. You actually mentioned them here. But then when we get to dealing with POTWs and MPDES permits and so on, well, you know, controlling nutrients in the ocean is very much part and parcel of the necessity of algal blooms. So I'm hoping that there is the kind of close cooperation and supervision so that the various sections are moving in the same direction in cooperation together in dealing with the matters that we have. So I think Bayona, for instance, is also another one here that is in Celine's group and others as well. So thanks very much.
Thank you
for that. Did you have any reaction that you want to give me or can I move on to...
To everything you just said? No, I agree with everything you said.
Oh, this is so good.
I just want, the only thing I want to mention is you mentioned the changes to the 4-1 rule. I just want to say the 4-1 program is a very resilient program. We are used to constant changes in the rules and regulations. I feel like the new rule kind of goes back to kind of where we were 5 years ago. So we'll just continue going on and, you know, use more of our state authority, coordinate with the Army Corps of Engineers, and we'll continue to protect our waters. I'm not too worried. Yeah, we're resilient.
Okay. Thanks a lot. John Key, if I may move on to your section, and thank you also for a very detailed report. So, and it's been mentioned before. I'll just emphasize it. The wording that you use here is on recycled water efforts is to continue to participate in regional recycled water working groups, such as it says Hyperion 2035. It's not called that anymore. It's called Pure Water LA, but also Pure Water Southern California, Ventura, Cayegas, and so on. I took note of that word, to participate, right? Because, you know, I believe that we have the talent, the leadership, the technical knowledge to do more than participate. I think we can lead. And I would like us, the regional board, not only to encourage what is being done, but to push for it. Because I think we absolutely, you know, we deal with water quality and that's what we think about. But my fellow board members, and you know this, we cannot count on imported water anymore. So we have to recycle, we have to conserve, we have to capture our stormwater, right? We don't do those things, we're going to have to desalinate the ocean. And that's the most expensive, and that should not be our first resource. So recycling our wastewater has to be an absolute priority for us. And I wonder how you feel about that and how you feel about your role in that.
Thanks for your comments. And I totally agree with you, the importance of the recycled water. So I might just kind of reconsider the participate, the words. So what I mean is participate is a lot of these pure water projects. We are actually, when we get the meeting with most of them are, we're monthly meeting with them, like getting an update from their progress of the pilot scale of the studies. So including, I guess, you might heard from the Jim from previously about regarding the PFAS. So PFAS concern is in POTW as well, and they are actively working on GAC and ion exchange in, as a part of the, their advanced treatment systems. So we're getting up to currently they're getting information about the, how they do, what kind of pilot scales activities are going on. We're getting results out of it. So mainly this meeting, and even though I use the participates, we're pretty much give them a kind of a direction of what we want, and the results, pilot scale results can be used for different directions. So instead of kind of, but the reason that I use the participate is, again, they are doing the most of the works that we're kind of making them to kind of clear direction and make a way to go through. So that's why I thought it was, it's not us to kind of leading the meeting itself, but for them, but we are actually play the crucial role in there to for them to clear make clear decision at the end for us to make a which permitting processes that we're gonna go through, what kind of credits that they're gonna get it through their treatment capacities, and what kind of eventually what would be the outcome of and how much volume of that they're gonna produce kind of things. So all those, each, even though under the IPR categories, we do have a lot of, like, water can be used in different directions. So all these detailed discussions, we've been in part of it. So I kind of always told young generations asking, oh, what could be the future kind of my career would be? I always recommend the recycled water parts, that it would be a lot of waters, a lot of fundings are coming through the field, and there's a lots of unknown fields still that and high technologies are still developing on that field. So I think it's a great career field for them to move forward. So that much, what I mean is I am very glad that I'm part of it, and our teams are working very hard to establish right direction for the future of recycled water projects.
Thank you. Thank you for that. You'll have to forgive me. I'm a lawyer, so words matter to me. But it also shows you the attention that I paid to the work that you
did. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Jim Kang, if I may ask you a couple of questions on your presentation. So as part of the accomplishments, you listed completion of review of 660 self-monitoring reports.
Yes.
And I mean, that's a tremendous number to have reviewed and digested. But I wanted to ask, what was the result of that? So there were 660 self-monitoring reports. I'm sure maybe they were all just full of, you know, glowing self-congratulation about how wonderful they did. But then, so one reviews them, then what was done with that review? How were they digested and analyzed? And what was the result of all of that?
Okay, sure. The review of the SMR cell monitoring reports is extremely important. It's really the pipeline coming to the NOV and the enforcement and also system upgrade. Because that's why I continue to instruct my staff to review the SMR report as soon as possible, because that will trigger about the current status of their treatment system. If we find something that they continue to violate the effluent limits or the inflow flow exceed the permit, then we will go to the compliance audit, compliance inspection, and then talk to them to see whether they need to get a permit, modify, amend the permit, or improve the treatment process. So it's very important. It's like a pipeline from the upstream pipeline to give us the pulse of the system for our, you know, we have 350 cases, active cases right now. Each case will produce 5 SMR reports each year. So, and that's why it's very important to really get, you know, have a closely monitor the status of each system, and it's tying to the control of the nutrient and the pathogens. That's the only way to do it, is to get a feedback control about the system after we issue the permit.
Right. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We've spoken about PFAS already, other board members have, so I won't go there. and about the CII permit. Thank you for all of the work you're doing on that. On Chiquita, you know, I do believe that much like the Dominguez Channel, you know, Chiquita really poses it's a responsibility of this board to make sure that liner is sound and that groundwater is not impacted. I think really do it's a sacred responsibility to the community. And so and I'm glad that many steps are being taken on the enforcement side with the AG's office in order to make sure that we meet our obligation to the community. So thank you. Thanks for
You're
that.
You're welcome.
So Jim, if I might turn to you and the enforcement part of things, thanks very much. In part of what you presented, you said staff received and triaged 186 environmental complaints. When you're talking about, when you use the word triage in connection with what the regional board does, can you explain that to us? What exactly is it that we do practically?
Sure. So complaints come in many different ways. Mainly they've been coming through our website, well, State Board's website. There's an environmental complaint tracking system there. Phone calls, emails, it comes into our complaint coordinator, Lala Cavadayan. And part of her process is, number one, is it water quality related? And then is it within the regional board's purview? If it is, she will send that to the program that would respond to the complaint. If it's not within the complaint system, let me back up a little bit. If it comes through a call or an email, she will enter it into that complaint system. So they all get routed to that online system. If it is outside of the water board's purview, she will refer that through the system to Division of Drinking Water, Fish and Wildlife, et cetera.
Okay. All right. And I saw that as part of your priorities is, you know, address 100% of violations requiring an MMP within 18 months of discovery. So it's great to see that metric as part of your priority. Thank you for that. A couple of other things, and I'm very aware of the fact that I'm taking up a lot of time, but there was a lot of material. It's not my fault. So in terms of compliance, regarding there were 400 facilities that claimed no exposure certification, and 135 facilities did not meet criteria and received notices of non-compliance, right? So can you tell us what happened with those notices of compliance? Are they ongoing right now? Have any of them been resolved in the interim, this 135 that were non-compliant?
Yes, let's see if Narissa is here and she could. Narissa Schrader is the senior water resource control engineer in the stormwater compliance unit.
Hi.
Good afternoon, board chair and board members. Yeah, what we do with the no exposure certification, if they don't qualify for that, we will require for them to apply for a notice of intent. So if facilities are not responsive to that, then we go through the MMP process. So that's how we take care of that.
So and is this process effective? Are you getting results? Are people coming into compliance as a result of these efforts?
Some are responsive, some are not. So then they would fall under the non-filer category, if you will. So then my unit also processes non-filers, and there's been a lot of efforts being done on the non-filer aspects, but we also use Senate Bill 205, Senate Bill 891 to leverage our efforts because the MMP process takes longer, and we thought that we could collaborate with the cities and counties to get these facilities into their business license and not issue that unless they apply for active coverage.
Right, thank you. I mean, I would like in the future to get reports on non-filers, recalcitrant folks, you know, in the industrial area, and just how we, you know, how we pursue enforcement actions. But thank you very much for that. Thanks so much. Is it okay with fellow board members if I continue with these questions? Should we? Okay. I don't have that much more to go. So I'm talking about recalcitrant responsible parties. Cesar, my next question is for you in your thing. So you identify it as a major issue. And so you say identify and moving USD cases with recalcitrant responsible parties towards assessment, remediation, and closure. So in your practice, what do you do with folks that are just intransigent, that won't meet their legal obligations?
We try to work with State Water Board and the Office of Enforcement to identify and how we, you know, ways to find the viable responsible parties, and so it is a you know, the fluent list. So sometimes we get them, sometimes we don't. So, but the list is still there. But yeah, we work with them to get them on board.
All right. Okay, thank you. Art and Gillian, next to you. Regarding, you know, we've talked about PFAS, so I won't go there. It's wonderful that you got the grant to clear up 112 backlogged cases. So are you seeing, just in your practice, a more expedited process for taking in contaminated cases, processing them, getting them cleaned up, closing cases so that they can be returned, to productive life, so that they can be developed, or are you getting more burdens to deal with every day? Is the backlog getting cleared up? How are you feeling about the process of, as I say, returning contaminated sites to life?
So we've, as I noted, we've completed the backlog. We've screened those cases. 33 were moved into active cases. I have two vacancies. I'm just waiting for more cases. If I can get more cases, I will fill those two positions. So we are, the staff are moving the cases, and I believe that in Jillian's section two, we're looking for more cases. And so, you know, to answer your question, we're ready. We move them. If there's an enforcement issue, we work with the enforcement team. We issue orders. We do everything we can to get these sites moving in terms of assessment and cleanup. But keep in mind, you know, it's a cost reimbursement program, which means a lot of the businesses, you know, they don't have the money. These are expensive regulatory processes to complete. So you have to keep that in mind, and that's why DFA has a program called SCAP, and I mentioned it, where there's money available. They have $34 million allocated that they get every year as part of the UST program, and that's still not enough for all the cases that are contaminated, that pose a threat, you know, to the environment. There's not enough funding there to really move all of the cases that we would like to. So we're ready, and Jillian can add her own input into the process.
Yeah, Chair Nahai, I would say, you know, we are, you know, definitely our goal is to work towards reducing the caseload, and we are using our processes. And I would say, you know, with the staff that we have, you know, every year I see we are the case load is decreasing. We're closing cases or cases going from backlog into assessment of active cases and moving along in the process. So the process does work. And then, you know, every so often we will get referrals, you know, for new cases from an oversight, local oversight agency or a property transaction, and then that would add to our caseload. But I would say generally, you know, we have the resources and we are working with the resources that we have to reduce the caseload and getting these sites cleaned up, because it is a priority, and returning it to, you know, beneficial uses.
The ECRG program, how well is that working? Does that have money?
Yeah, so the ECRG program, you know, that's led by DTSC, you know, and in our program, you know, we have a handful of sites that were awarded the grants, but as of a date, you know, they've completed round three of the funding array, and there's no more funding. So it's, no, it's already sunset. So we were able to get, you know, several sites funded, you know, one being the Fourth Avenue drill site, Burke Oil, and the Gage landfill. So it was a source of a resource of funding for RPs or I guess cities, and they were able to utilize that. But unfortunately, they're not, DTSC is not accepting any more applications.
Right. Yeah. They're winding down, but they do have a limited amount of funding that they're going to distribute. The site I talked about in terms of accomplishment, the 4th Street Avenue drill site, even though they've built the complex, they're in the red because it's so expensive again. And so they're going to apply for some of this leftover money, I'll quote, leftover money that DTSC has under the ECRG program. It's not very much. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much for those responses. Those are all of my questions. I don't know if board members have additional questions or comments for staff before we move on to the next item. I have some, but I don't know if they're.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to do a follow up to make sure that. We coordinate or give it a sense of when we can have those informational items on Native American or Indigenous beneficial uses, and then on the state's inviting the state representative to give us a summary and update on their environmental justice and equity plan.
Okay, thank you. Any comments from Board Member Camacho?
I guess just one comment. I know that the vacancies are hitting everybody hard, but and I know that you've been taking a lot of measures outside, external, to try to find new talent out there. But don't forget about the talent from within as well, too, and to cultivate that and make sure that all of the staff members are ready to move on to the next step. And that's an important thing to do within an organization. So, and when I look around, I see folks that have been here for a while moving up to these positions, and so that's a good sign that you are developing your own within this organization. So kudos to you.
Board Member Camacho, if I can add, yes, definitely. Developing our staff internally, we're doing that, it's important. Also, State Board has started a mentorship program as well, and some of us are participating in that, where we're either a mentee or a mentor to staff, and it's a one-year commitment, so that's also helping us as well. So thank you.
Okay. Do you have any closing comments? Closing comments? Okay. I have a few things just to recap, but look, first of all, let me say this. When I was first put on the board many, many years ago, there was an article that was written about the board, and the reporter referred to the regional board as an organization that's obscure but powerful, right? So, and I've always said I don't want the regional board to be obscure anymore. You know, people should know what the regional board is, the work that it does, the work that it does, and so on. And for all of you and all of the staff, I just, as you know, just want to remind everybody, you know, you do noble work. This is valid, necessary, noble work. And just as a citizen, I applaud all of you, and I applaud all of the staff that work every day to protect our environment. So I want to thank you for that. So here's just some of the things that I've, you know, come away with, which, you know, I would like to mention very quickly. It's just really recapping. I think, you know, wildfires, dealing with monitoring, continuing our work there. I think we did. It was great that we went and visited Altadena and looked at the burn sites and in solidarity with the community. So that work has to continue in terms of really monitoring the effects of that. Algal blooms, we must have an adult conversation with our POTWs about nutrient loadings to the ocean. We must continue to with the recycling program, as we've talked about. The CII program, I'm hoping that by June of 2026, that will come out, come back in a way that we can adopt it and go forward. PFAS has been mentioned a number of times here. Bayona has to remain as a priority. Chiquita, Boeing, the acceleration of cleanups, the ever-growing ravages of climate change and how we recognize and deal with those. Of course, the MS4 permit, TMDLs, and in general, enforcing our regulations and our permits. And then just finally, I would like, and I think one of the board members mentioned this, as we give directions as board members, I would like to have an organized way that we receive reports back about because it's easy for board members to give a direction and for staff to say, okay, we accept that direction, but unless there's a program for it to come back to us and say, you know, 6 months ago you asked for this and this is what was done, because otherwise it can you've acted on it, but we won't know what has happened. So those are just some of my comments, but basically it's a resounding thank you for all of your work. Okay, is that it? All right, fine. Next, we will move to, I think, our final item, which is the selection of subcommittees. And the subcommittees that we currently have, and we should just all talk about this. We have a public outreach subcommittee, which is Norma Camacho and David Nahai. And we have a racial equity and environmental justice committee, which is Vice Chair Ashton and Board Member Mendez. Those are the subcommittees that we have. I would like to keep them in place. We also have the standing subcommittees, such as the litigation subcommittee. But apart from the litigation subcommittee as a standing, kind of entrenched subcommittee, what other subcommittees do we have?
And the litigation subcommittee is one of our closed session subcommittees, so that's not for today's discussion. This is just our open session. But
all right. So these are our subcommittees that we have then.
Yes, this is.
We need to find a Christensen subcommittee.
Well, I was going to ask. I remember we established a wildfire subcommittee last year in response to the LA fires. Did that get maybe absorbed into the racial equity one?
I don't know.
According to the asterisk.
Do you see what I'm saying? This is why I'm saying we need to get reports back. So we established a subcommittee, and you're right, we did.
And I was going to be on that subcommittee, so I exist somewhere.
it got absorbed into the public outreach committee. And so I don't think at that time that we had a separate subcommittee for wildfire with you on it.
Okay.
All right. Well, then the public outreach subcommittee should have also mentioned, not that you did, but it should have mentioned board member Christensen as a member of it. if it was.
We try and keep our subcommittees at two.
Can we have three board members on a subcommittee?
We keep them at two just to minimize public Open Meeting Act.
Okay, well let's ask this. The Wildfire Subcommittee at this point in time, what do you envision that it would do? Would it interact with staff as to monitoring or what efforts are afoot?
Yes,
to deal with the next.
Certainly, but yeah, and forward looking. I think we were focused on recovery when we first established it, and as well we should have been.
Yeah.
But looking forward into what can we as a board do, and in our projects that come across our desk and our permitting processes, to better instill some level of mitigation and resilience in this region, because we don't have it.
Could I propose another subcommittee that is dealing with climate resilience, that deals
That's
with
exactly right.
wildfires and sea level rise and all of the various right. issues that, yes,
yeah.
have been
Yeah,
discussed.
That's great.
This is exactly what I was about to propose.
I think that's great.
Which is that it isn't about wildfires, because as we know, we're dealing with the ravages
climate
of climate change.
Yes.
All the time. And therefore, we have that catastrophe, but unfortunately, there's another climate-driven one that's waiting for us. And how this board deals with that, because they all affect the environment, right? Mm-hmm.
I think that's very wise, and certainly it's all part of a system that has to be addressed together.
Okay. All right, so what do we need to do to establish
what's
a subcommittee?
The title?
And go ahead.
What is the title of the subcommittee again?
We'll call it
Climate Resilience.
Climate Resilience Subcommittee.
Yeah, because we did maybe 3 years ago have something on resiliency and waterways and rivers, I believe, but I think we got rid of it last year. I don't know.
Yeah, but I think this is a great idea, because it'll encompass our readiness to deal with the next, you know, climate cataclysm. So who would like to serve on that subcommittee? Okay.
I will.
Board Member Christensen will lead it.
I'd be happy to serve unless you want to.
He spoke up first.
No, go ahead.
I'd be happy to serve on it as well.
Okay. So that committee will be Board Member Christensen and Board Member Mendez. All right. Is everybody else happy? Are you happy with your other subcommittee? Are you doing good work on your subcommittee?
Santa Monica.
Yes, and we have myself and Board Member Mendez have a plan for the next couple of months of what we would like to present to the board and what we would like to ask the state board, as he mentioned, to present to us with regard to the racial equity and environmental justice subcommittee. So,
all right.
Thank you.
And go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to say that I'm willing to continue to serve in the public outreach capacity and my engagement with the Regional Oversight Committee for the Safe Clean Water Program. And so, but just wanted to make sure that we have consensus across the room, if there's not anybody else that wants to do that, because we're at the point now that the biennial review is out and about for a 30-day public review. And so it's an exciting time, and I think a lot of the thoughts and advice from staff, from this board's staff, has been incorporated into that review, and so looking forward to comments.
Right. Well, and I do. I want to become further involved with the work of the ROC and the whole Safe Clean Water program. So,
yeah.
So you and I can just continue on that
yeah.
on that subcommittee. Okay, so
on the ROC and the safe clean water, have we ever gotten a informational item on it to just update the entire board of what is going on, and like maybe inviting some of the key players, since we don't really have access to what is going on or the individuals?
We haven't done it for a while. We have done it in the past.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good idea now that the biennial report is out, that they could come to a future meeting and discuss just some of the recommendations and how they've approached it. And so, and a lot of it, some of it has to do with a collaboration and coordination with this board.
Yeah.
So
that'd be great. Thank you.
And actually, talking about outreach altogether, I've invited JPL to come and present to us on their incredible sensing technology that they have. So, for instance, you know, about algal blooms, their sensing technology shows them the temperature of the water, and it's almost a forewarning as the temperature rises, which then portends the possibility. So I know, you know, we're all involved in different boards and different things that we're doing. So inviting folks to come and talk to us, or having us, and JPL, by the way, has invited us to go for a tour of the Jet Propulsion Lab. I've done it. It's fascinating, the kinds of things that they do, and they need actually to do, I think, a lot better job of showing people what they do, because it's quite startling to. So, and I know that staff is very open to that. You know, we've invited MWD, for instance, to come and talk to us, and so just on our travels, you know, various environmental groups or tribal organizations, or social equity groups and so on. We should invite them to come and talk. So for instance, today would have been great to, as if we haven't covered enough ground and done enough mental work. Anyway, go ahead.
Just one other thing I wanted to mention to all is that the Safe Clean Water Program is going to be standing up a scientific advisory committee to talk about scientific priorities that need to be addressed in the LA area. And I think harmful algal blooms are going to be at the top of that, amongst other things. And so we should just keep an eye on what that committee is, and maybe look into how we can participate in something like that with the data that we have, and to provide input into that process as well. And so it's probably going to lead to scientific studies and perhaps project implementation with funding at the end of the line. So.
Okay.
Before you adjourn, I got an email from Mr. Tahir, so I don't know if he wants to comment on the subcommittee item, but if he does, could we just check in with him? He is entitled to comment on any item on the agenda, so if he has a public
comment. Of course.
So just, Mr. Tahir, are you here? Is he in the Zoom room?
He is.
Can you?
He is, but he doesn't have the phone anymore.
Oh.
Regular mic.
Okay. Did you still want to comment on this item?
Yeah, I did. I'd like to participate in one of the subcommittees, if it's possible. I raised the issue of the impact of the Altadena fire on potential groundwater contamination associated with exploding fuel tanks and in one particular instance, it's a Chevron station on the corner of Lake and Altadena Drive that was completely destroyed, and the tanks were removed. My question did the USD unit take a look at that site to see if there was any leakage from the tanks to the subsurface, in which case that represents a potential problem in contaminating groundwater? I'd also like to be on some subcommittee that deals with the MS4 permit and other legal issues, which are going to be pretty much prevalent when we discuss the MS4 permit beginning in March. So if it's possible, I'd like to play some role. Now, you guys know, even though you think I'm a pain in the rear end, I've been a consultant for 30 years, and I've dealt with a bunch of regional boards in the past. And I've dealt with several MS4 permits. So I have some of an expertise in that area, and I'd like to share it with subcommittees.
These subcommittees are intended for board member participation and not, so as a member of the public, you wouldn't be eligible to join. In some instances, the subcommittee may decide to have an informational item or a public meeting dedicated to some of the issues they've been working on, in which case, of course, that would be agendized and you would be welcome to comment there.
Well, figure it is, you know, I have a different read on that based on the Citizen's Guide for working with California Water Boards. And I think the public is entitled to be involved in such committees.
These particular subcommittees aren't open to the public, but you're welcome to send me the information that you're referring to. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Do we need to vote on the subcommittees to keep them active again?
You can. You don't have to.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's do it. Let's make it formal. So I move adoption of the subcommittees as we have just described them. The public outreach subcommittee will be composed of board member Camacho and board member Nahai. The climate resilience committee will consist of board member Christensen and board member Mendez, and the racial equity and environmental justice /SEPs committee will be led by Vice Chair Ashtian and board member Mendez. Could I have a roll call for the vote?
Oh, I'll second.
Okay, sorry. It's getting late. Could we call the roll?
Vice Chair Ashtian?
Yes.
Board Member Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Board Member Mendez?
Yes.
Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Roll call completed. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, we can adjourn. All right. Thank you all so much.